Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program, the speech, pretty much the speech all night, what we liked, what we didn't. We're going to talk to a bunch of folks about their reaction. Dan Kovalik, human rights and labor attorney from Pittsburgh, going to talk about the free trade stuff. We're going to get Abe Amoros, legislative director for the Laborers International Union, to come in and talk about the construction stuff. Mitchell Hirsch from the National Employment Law Project going to be here talking about how do we get these unemployed folks back to work. Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, going to do some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. What are the Republicans, what's their reaction? If you watched it on TV, there was not a happy face on the Republican side of the aisle. A lot of very sour looks, like someone dumped in their Wheaties. A big, big plop right in the middle of the Wheaties. So good, good, good. I'm happy. This is, to me, the best possible thing he could have done. I am surprised. He looked like a president with a mission. He looked like someone with a purpose, and all the credit in the world. Now, it's one thing to give a fiery, angry black man speech, which is what I liked. Now it's getting it passed. Now it's being pushed through. Now it's getting it accomplished. Also, we're going to talk to Tom Nielsen. He's one of the three folks who was arrested on Tuesday. Get this, and we'll talk about this later in the second hour. But he paid his money to go to the pay-per-view town hall meeting held by Republican Paul Ryan. And he wanted to ask a question, and they threw him out and then arrested him. So we're going to talk to the 71-year-old Tom Nielsen about that. But no, this speech, the very, very powerful, some things I like, some things I didn't. We'll get into that. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The things I liked, took it right to the Republicans, said, look, this is a middle-of-the-road proposal. It's stuff that you want. You wanted these tax cuts to get people back to work. You wanted tax cuts. Here they are. We're gonna extend the payroll tax. We're gonna give employers tax breaks to hire people if they hire people. Some hanky stuff in there we'll get into, but really something we needed, something he needed to be able to stand up and look decisive, look authoritative, look like someone who had an iron fist. Now, if you watched the speech, you saw John Boehner in the background. I don't think he stood to applaud once, but his eyes were roving his side of the aisle. You know, who are we going to have to keep in line? Very, very interesting how the way he looked, because he was taking notes on who was standing, who was applauding, and the paybacks, I'm sure, that will be coming with that evening. So we're going to get to all that. One of the things that caught my attention right in the beginning of this speech, And this is the only portion of the speech that I'm going to read. The rest of it you can hear later online, or hopefully you watched it. But he said millions of Americans who are watching right now don't care about politics. They have real life concerns. Many have spent months looking for work. Others are doing their best just to scrape by. Giving up nights out with the family to save on gas, or making the mortgage, postponing retirement to send a child to college. These men and women grew up with the faith in an America where hard work and responsibility paid off. They believed in a country where everyone gets a fair shake and does their fair share, where if you stepped up, did your job, and were loyal to your company, that loyalty would be rewarded with a decent salary and good benefits, maybe a raise once in a while. Obama said, if you did the right thing, you could make it in America. But for decades now, he said, Americans have watched that compact erode. They have seen the deck too often stacked against them, and they know that Washington hasn't always put their interests first. To me, that's the crux of the speech. The reality is the compact is broken. And the reason that it's broken is there is no force. There really is no strong enough force right now to make sure that that compact stays intact. And this is what 40 years of deunionization has done. This is what 40 years of business policy attacking workers and attacking policy has done to this country. The government is not going to stand up for working people. Understand that. As much as Obama wanted to say, you know, I support workers, at the end of the day, he is at the mercy of big business. The only people who can stand up for workers are workers themselves through their unions. So when he talked about the broken compact, to me, that sparked the anger that I've had all these years, and I think most working people have, that they have played by the rules. They have showed up to work every day. They've done their best, and their best is never enough. And it's never rewarded. And I love these right-wing ideologues who say, well, you don't like it, you can just go somewhere else. You know what? It's industry-wide. It's across the country. It's because there is no one pulling things up. When the wages start to fall because there's no one saying, no, we're gonna buoy those back up, they continue to fall. And when you see health care being taken away at the rate that it's being taken away, you see wages falling, you see pensions virtually disappearing, it's not government's job to make sure that that stuff stays. That's the workers through their collective bargaining. And I give Obama credit for one thing. Absolutely, he did stand up and say, not on his watch. You know, collective bargaining is something that we're going to make sure stays, because we don't need to have a race to the bottom. We should be working our way to the top. And it's something that we've talked about a number of times on this program. If the right had their way, they would follow the Ron Paul way of thinking.
Do you advocate getting rid of the minimum wage? Would that create more jobs?
Absolutely. And it would help the poor, the people who need a job. The minimum wage is a mandate. We're against mandates, so why should we have it? No, it would be very beneficial.
Yeah, you know, get rid of that minimum wage, you know, that pesky minimum wage. We could get people to work for a buck an hour, make them desperate enough, create that desperation class, and having destroyed that compact that Obama talked about. Another theme he hit on, and I hope people heard it. He said, look, these big multinational corporations, these big giants, profits are back. They're sitting on mountains of cash. Profits are back. CEO pays back. Everything's wonderful in the boardrooms. Everything's wonderful on the private jets, on the private golf courses. Things are happy. And he called to their patriotism. Look, you need to hire people. And I wish we would do more of that. Now, what frustrated me is in the box where Michelle Obama was sitting was Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE. Would have been nice not to see him there, a guy who has done more to outsource jobs in this country than I think any other single person. But he was still there. I mean, you look at GE, I mean, Here's a company that, you know, we pay. We actually pay them to employ us. It's kind of a bizarre setup. But Obama pointed out the fact that our roads are clogged, our schools, our roads, our bridges, our communities need to be rebuilt. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. We should not be in the mid-20th century. We should be on the cutting edge. And it all comes back down to, and you know, what we've been talking about for the longest time. It comes back down to the fact that we have allowed the wealthiest folks to walk away. We've allowed them to take their spoils and leave. We've allowed them to take all of the dessert, all of the pie, whatever you want to call it, for themselves. And nothing goes back into providing the next one. And I like the fact that he said, look, we should be adding teachers. South Korea is adding teachers. We're firing them. What's that going to do for us? He said veterans who are coming back from fighting for this country. They shouldn't have to come back and fight for jobs. Now, where I will pick a bone, I've been talking about the Georgia plan for some time, for a couple of days now. He threw that out there. I'm not fond of that. I think it's a bad idea. But maybe it's what the Republicans are going to have. You know, slave labor has always been something they've been fond of. So maybe we need to give them 8 weeks of slave labor to get them to vote for the rest of this. And what I liked throughout the speech, he said, look, pass this jobs plan right away. And he said it numerous times, pass it now, pass it right away. Get this done. Get these people back to work. Do it now. Now, if you look at the first stimulus bill, they were saying somewhere around 40% of the money that was allocated were tax cuts. So we handed a bunch of money to the millionaires and billionaires, but also spread it out through the economy. Early numbers on the American Jobs Act, which I think this is really something different for him. He didn't come and say, these are what I'd like to see. He came and said, this is the bill. This is the act right here. Boom, 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 boom. This is it. Pass this. Something completely different that I don't think I've seen from him. Because, you know, he's one of these guys who wants government to work the way it was meant to work. All the bills come out of Congress. You say, this is what I'd like to do. It's your charge to go and make that happen, which is where I think he made a massive mistake on health care reform. Had he come out like this and said, this is it. This is my bill. Boom, 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 boom. Go pass it and pass it now. I think we'd be in a much better place. I think he'd be looked on a lot differently and in a much stronger position. Look, this country, they respect strength. They respect somebody, this guy tonight, the guy who stood up there before the 535 members of Congress, a couple of the other, a well full of other folks, and stood there and said, now, pass this now, do this. And actually, you know, stood up and said, we're going to make this happen. I mean, this is what the American people want to see. This is the kind of stuff people need to see out of their president. But this bill, from what I'm told, this American Jobs Act, while the first one had 40% in tax cuts and incentives, this one, I'm told, somewhere around the neighborhood of 60% of tax cuts and incentives. Now, there's some really big incentives. Like if you hire someone who's been unemployed for long term, they're talking about a $4,000 tax cut. That seems pretty sizable. But this thing, this Georgia plan, just kind of got me not so happy. Not so happy whatsoever. I did like how at the end he kind of turned it and said, look, you know, what's best for creating jobs is not giving oil companies big bucks. It's helping those small businesses. It's helping the mom and pops. It's helping Main Street, not Wall Street anymore. And he said, you know what? We need to hold millionaires and billionaires' feet to the fire. We need to increase their taxes, not cut teachers. And I think that's a smart place to start. The Republicans, you know, when they started talking about cutting, all happy, happy, happy. But as soon as he said, you know what? You can't raise taxes on the people who were working for a living because you took Grover Norquist's pledge. It was a nice little turn of the screw. Anyway, We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dan Kovalik. He's a human rights and labor attorney from Pittsburgh. We're going to talk a little bit about this and the trade agreements that the president wants to push through. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James Hoffa says workers under attack from the radical right-wing Tea Party need to go to war politically to take out the Tea Party and pass policies that create jobs. Hoffa stands by those comments made this week at a Detroit Labor Day rally.
They got a war with us, and there's only going to be one winner. It's going to be the workers of Michigan and America. We're going to win that war. Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. And President Obama, we want one thing. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
A new report from the United Nations on Trade and Development says austerity policies designed to cut public debt and deficits will end up causing permanent recession. Report lead author, former German Deputy Finance Minister Heiner Flassbeck, says the exact opposite of austerity policies are what's needed to reverse economic decline for working people. He says unemployment is caused by sharply lower demand. With the private sector failing to produce demand, he says governments must step in with huge stimulus programs to reduce unemployment. Flassbeck says that current austerity programs are a disaster, and his report says much of the blame for the financial crisis resulted from deregulation of financial markets. The report calls for a reversal of austerity policies with increased wages, tighter regulation of financial markets, and huge government economic stimulus programs. Blood safety concerns and violations of the National Labor Relations Act has triggered a Red Cross worker strike in Michigan. Jesse Russell has more.
Red Cross workers are on strike in Michigan over blood safety and conditions for donors and employees. The strike comes after a National Labor Relations Board ruling that sided with employees' allegations that the Red Cross is in violation of the National Labor Relations Act. Workers say a strike could have been avoided. The next rounds of negotiations are scheduled for September 17th, according to the OPEIU, which represents some of the workers along with the Teamsters. Strikes will start in other states if safety concerns aren't addressed in Michigan. Workers are also protesting changes to health care and pensions that they say the organization made without negotiations. The workers have been without a contract since 2008.
Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union rallied on train tracks in Vancouver Wednesday to block a train destined for the Port of Longview in Washington State. Other locomotives were allowed to pass, but this one, hauling corn, was stopped due to a dispute with EGT. An international grain consortium workers say is intent on breaking the union. The consortium has been seeking nullification of an agreement that says the ILWU handles all commodities at the port. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay, jets on out of town. Town. Here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, the speech I thought was, for the most part, an excellent speech. It showed a someone who's willing to stand up and with a little spine. I got to give him credit, a little bit of a spine. Took some shots at the Republicans, throwing Abraham Lincoln out there saying, hey, look, you know, even during the Civil War, he was able to, you know, to build the Transcontinental Railroad, to launch the National Academy of Sciences, you know, set up that first land-grant colleges. You know, still things that we all used. I think it was a good speech overall. My problem, the trade agreements. I mean, this idea that somehow we need more of this insane free trade just doesn't sit well with me. Anyway, that's why I've asked Dan Kovalik. He's a human and labor rights attorney living in the Pittsburgh area. He's written a great piece over at Huffington Post. Just click on his name on our site at thericksmithshow.com. It'll take you over there talking about his friend. Dan, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Good to be here.
You know, I listened to the president's speech, and for the most part, very, very positive. My only problem is are these trade agreements.
Yes, I mean, first of all, you know, what's disappointing is that free trade has largely been a lie. You know, we were promised jobs under NAFTA. In fact, both Mexico and the U.S. lost jobs. The U.S. lost thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs due to NAFTA. Under both the Colombia and Korea Free Trade Agreement, the Economic Policy Institute is predicted will lose over 200,000 jobs. So the idea that this is somehow part of a job creation bill really is a false promise.
Yeah, and my problem is, you know, I understand you want to try and open up borders, and we should be doing that with countries like ours. I agree with that. We should trade with like countries. But when you look at a country like Colombia, where they throw union leaders out of airplanes or pull people off of buses and shoot them or have people ride by in motorcycles shooting priests and labor leaders, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, well, exactly. Colombia remains the most dangerous country in the world to be a trade unionist. Already this year, 23 trade union leaders have been killed in that country. And we feel that while that sort of anti-union violence continues, that a trade deal with Colombia is inappropriate, and indeed quite in contradiction of President Obama's talk about the importance of collective bargaining rights, which he mentioned tonight in his speech. And if he believes that, he should not be rewarding Colombia with a free trade agreement.
Right, and I sat no more than 20 feet away from him when he was campaigning Obama when he said this.
You can trust me when I say that whenever trade deals we negotiate come to my desk, they are going to be good for American workers, that they'll have powerful labor and environmental protections, and that we will enforce those protections.
You know, and I look at this and I ask the question, do these have powerful labor and environmental standards in them? I don't think so.
They have none.
These are the Bush agreements.
That's right. Bush signed both agreements. The labor movement was successful in blocking both agreements. In the case of the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, we've now blocked it for almost 5 years because of the lack of labor and environmental requirements in the bill. And as you had there, Obama, when he was running for president, promised he'd prevent us from such trade agreements. Even, if you recall, at one point promised he would reform NAFTA because of the inadequacies there. And now he's really turned his back on those promises.
You know, but all in all, I look at this speech, and while I'm dead set against these agreements, this is a step back towards campaign Obama. We saw a little fire, maybe a little steel in his spine. Not as much as I would like to see, but still much, much better overall.
Well, and I agree with you there. And obviously, we need to support those positive things he wants to do for workers in terms of making jobs. But at the same time, we do need to continue to hold his feet to the fire on opposing these free trade agreements.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Dan Kovalik, a human and labor rights attorney from the Pittsburgh area. He's written a piece, Murder of of Catholic Priest in Colombia, Greeted with Collective Silence. Talk to me a little bit about your friend who was recently murdered in Colombia.
Well, his name was Father Restrepo, a wonderful man. He was actually advocating against a gold mining company from Canada, which was attempting and is attempting, in fact, to take over land in Colombia, which would actually require an entire city to be moved to move in there. It would take away the livelihood of 2,000 private miners. He was advocating against that, even put up a YouTube video against that, and shortly after he was killed by people presumed to be right-wing paramilitaries. And, you know, it's just devastating. And as I note in my piece, that type of violence would warrant a resounding response from the U.S. if this were not a country the U.S. considers its closest ally in the region, and query whether Colombia deserves to continue to be such a close ally given that type of violence, which happens every day in that country and which, frankly, is largely supported by the state of Colombia.
You know, you point out the fact that Venezuela's prisons are, you know, just as bad, if not worse, than Colombia's, and, it, you know, where labor leaders end up as well. That it made the front page of the Pittsburgh newspaper, but this story, not a whisper about it. And I guess my question is, does that have to do with the fact that we're supposed to be hating Venezuela and wrapping our arms around Colombia?
Well, that seems to be the case. I mean, you look at Colombia, and, you know, there's an incredible fact. Again, there's more unionists killed there than any country in the world. They have more disappeared people than any country in the hemisphere, even if you compare it to, like, you know, fascist-led Argentina in the 70s, for example. Incredible human rights abuses in that country. Again, really, truthfully unmatched by any country in the region. And yet you hear almost nothing about that. And yet, you know, a prisoner dies in a prison in Cuba or whatever, and it makes front page news. And I think we have to, you know, get back to a position where we judge countries equally in terms of their human rights.
I absolutely agree. You know, when I look at this, you know, there's to me no upside with a trade agreement with Colombia. You know, in looking at this from, you know, maybe outside of the labor position, which I have a hard time doing, is there any upside to this for our country, having this open border agreement with Colombia? I mean, is there something so special that we're going to be have to open those borders up to get our products in or financing in? What is it that draws us there?
No, in fact, well, there's a few things. I mean, first of all,
besides cocaine and coffee,
well,
what else
exactly
is there?
Well, right now, frankly, the border is 95% open. That is to say that 95% of the goods we want to sell in Colombia without tariff protections we're able to do. So we're really looking at a 5% increase in trade by the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. So our position is such a small increase shouldn't be given, you know, as a reward given their anti-union violence. But in terms of what interests are being benefited by such a free trade agreement, really you're looking at large farmers, not small farmers, but large farming interests, which are going to be able under the free trade agreement to dump very cheap and subsidized food into Colombia, which frankly will displace millions of small farmers.
Like we did in Mexico.
As we did in Mexico and under NAFTA. And if you want to, you know, find out why Mexico is the disaster it is today, you need only look at those policies under NAFTA. And it's those large farming interests as well as large mining interests, like the gold mine I mentioned, trying to take over land, that are pushing for this free trade agreement. Again, it's not going to benefit workers here or middle-class people. It's going to benefit a few very large corporations.
Because I keep hearing this number, and I'm sure they've pulled it out of the dark side of their moon, you know, reached back there and popped the number out of their, you know, the dark side of the moon there. Somehow I'm seeing 250,000 new jobs created by these three free trade agreements. And I'm sorry, every number I've seen from reputable sources have us losing, as you said, 200,000. I've seen 159,000. But everybody that I consider reputable saying these are losers.
Exactly. And, again, all we have to do is look back at NAFTA, where we were promised that that was going to be a job creator, and it was a job destroyer. And the problems in NAFTA haven't been fixed, and the free trade agreements being considered are really based on that model, which is a failed model.
You know, for me, I've been saying, you know, in talking about Colombia, that, you know, there's some on the political right in this country who I think would like to do some of the same things that Colombia does to labor leaders here, and, you know, making the U.S. more business friendly like Colombia.
Well, I think that's right, and I think people should be concerned about that. That, you know, you do business with a company with a country like Colombia that has such abysmal human and labor rights. And you have a situation where, in the end, you have a race to the bottom. And where they are now, we could be later. And we really don't want to go there.
And going back to your friend Father Restrepo, any chance of ever finding who did this?
I think so. You know, history shows that probably we'll find out in a year from now or even longer who did it. And by then he'll sadly be forgotten largely by the judicial system in Colombia. And those people will never be prosecuted. Right now, impunity in Colombia, meaning the percentage of crimes like this which are not prosecuted, is now hovering around 95%.
Yeah, and
meaning... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Meaning 95% of the people who carry out those types of atrocities are never tried and convicted.
Yeah, I go back and what you said there just popped into my head. I think you were involved with the Chiquita Banana case as well years ago.
Yes, I've been involved in several cases against companies we've alleged to work with paramilitary groups who've carried out atrocities. In the case of Chiquita, they ended up admitting in a criminal case that they paid paramilitary groups over $1.7 million, ran guns to them, and their support ended up, we know, in the assassination of 14,000 civilians.
Wow.
And that is something that people in the labor movement and people of good conscience simply cannot abide.
I'm right there with you. Dan Kovalik, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work that you're doing and bringing attention to what's going on over there. And I hope that we will stand up and fight back at least this portion of this unholy trinity, if you will.
Yep, I'm with you on that, and I appreciate you as well.
Thanks so much, Dan. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
In the tortured language of corporate world, workers are no longer fired. They just experienced, quote, an employment adjustment. But the most twisted euphemism I've heard in a long time comes from DuPont. We are investigating the reports of these, quote, unfavorable tree symptoms, the pesticide maker recently stated. How unfavorable? Finito. Flatlined. The tree is dead. Not just one tree, but hundreds of thousands all across the country are suffering the final symptom. The culprit turns out to be Imprelis, a DuPont weed killer widely applied to lawns, golf courses, and, ironically, cemeteries. Rather than just poisoning dandelions and other weeds, the herbicide also seems to be causing spruces, pines, willows, poplars, and other unintended victims to croak. It's been devastating, says a Michigan landscaper who applied Imprelis to about 1,000 properties this spring and has already had more than a third of them suffer outbreaks of tree deaths. It looks like someone took a flamethrower to them, he says. At first, DuPont tried to dodge responsibility, claiming that landscape workers might be applying the herbicide improperly. The corporation even urged customers to be patient and leave the tree corpses on their lawns to see if they come back to life in a few years. However, faith-based landscaping was a hard sell. Disgruntled homeowners began filing lawsuits, and then DuPont had its own aha moment. Trees on the grounds of the DuPont Country Club also developed the unfavorable symptoms of Imprelis poisoning. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, with the cooperation of DuPont, the Environmental Protection Agency has finally banned the sales of the tree killer. But Because of inadequate testing and the corporation's rush to profit, the poison still remains in soils and water all across the country and will remain there for many moons, and the deaths will continue. Will we never learn? Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street, Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So what did you think of the speech? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, aside from the trade things that we just talked about, I'm pretty optimistic. Talking about actually putting people back to work, some smart incentives, not just here's some money, go out and spend it. Actually talking about some actual projects. I think a good start. The question was, you know, one of the questions I had looking at the crowd, I was looking for David Vitter. Did he take advantage of the Republican from Louisiana? Did he take advantage of two-for-one, you know, diaper night there in Louisiana? As you know, it's alleged that the good senator used to, you know, visit the D.C. madams, you know, a couple of her working girls, and that he used to like to wear diapers and be cleaned up afterwards. So you take whatever you want out of the whole diaper scenario. I'm not touching it. That's dirty business. Also, Representative Paul Braun, from Republican from Georgia, he told the people on Fox today that he wasn't going to show up. He'd be in the building, and he's going to tweet from his office or cloakroom or who knows where he can watch it on TV and communicate. Again, total disrespect of the president and of the office in the White House. But my favorite guy, T-Twit, Republican Congressman Joe Walsh, Republican from Illinois, the guy who owes, you know, somewhere around $120,000 in back child support, our deadbeat dad of Congress. You know, again, I keep going back, where are the family values people going, hey, deadbeat, pay up. Now what he has done, and this is where, you know, this divorce business is nasty stuff. Now he's going after his ex-wife and trying to have sanctions put against her using everything they can do. Just to crush this woman who is raising their child. It is just nuts. Here's a guy who makes $174,000 a year, and that's not even enough. Just nuts. Anyway, in looking at this, the speech tonight, there are so many good things to get into. The infrastructure, the construction jobs, which I think we should be moving into, but beyond that, there's a lot of things in Congress that are also there that I think are part of this. You know, there's the Currency Reform for Fair Trade Act, which I think should be a no-brainer on all sides of the aisle, which would give the Department of Commerce the ability to take on people who manipulate their currency, i.e. the Chinese, who we have lost almost 2.5 million jobs to over the last 10 years. 2.5 million gone. And the Republicans are, well, they're coming back, never coming back, gone. Really? Those are good-paying manufacturing jobs. Gone. Why? Because they cheat and they do what they do with the trade with their currency. And we let them do it. 2.5 million jobs gone in the last 10 years. And there are so many good opportunities out there. And Jan Schakowsky has a number of bills that I think are fantastic. You know, the Emergency Jobs Act that, you know, they claim would create some 2.2 million jobs by doing things that I've been talking about from the beginning. Having people do work in their community. You know, granny needs something done. You need curbs painted. You need stuff done in the community. Grass cut, fences mended, whatever. You need the parks being, you know, cleaned up. There's a bunch of jobs there. Get college kids, high school kids together, start doing some student job work. Good stuff. There's an awful lot of opportunity. And what she's saying is, look, you know, you give these people who have been laid off, you give them jobs. You give them these last resort jobs. Gives them a little pride, a little little self-reliance, you know, that therapeutic quality that work gives us all. And it's not going to cost anything, she says. You know why? Because she's going to pass the Fair Tax Act, which I think we desperately, desperately need. But you look at this, and, you know, I keep going back to the progressive, the Congressional Progressive Caucus's budget, the people's budget. There are so many things in that that could have really, really given teeth to what the president talked about tonight. You know, making sure that everyone has health care, making sure that, you know, Social Security is secure, and that we protect private pensions and require corporate accountability. None of this is going on right now. But for me, it goes back to that broken compact that Obama talked about. Give people the right to join and form unions, the right to organize. To me, that's paramount. And this was one of the things I talked about right when President Obama took office. Had he stepped forward and said, you know what, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make sure that when this thing turns around, and it will, we're going to make sure that when, because I'm telling you right now, I marked this on the calendar. Had he done that, those trillions of dollars that corporate America is sitting on would be sitting in people's pockets. Because the unions that the people would have formed during 2009 and 2010 would have demanded those profits be divvied up with the people who created them. Not allowing more layoffs, not allowing more budget cuts, not allowing more benefit cuts and more wage cuts. No, no. These companies are wildly profitable. And what they're doing is, that's a great opportunity. We're making money and we can steal back from our workers and make even more money. There's so much opportunity here. And, you know, during the whole budget, the whole debt ceiling debacle, they kept pushing this idea of cut, cut, cut. Why aren't we talking about our trade deficit? Let's cut, cut, cut that. Why don't we talk about fair trade? And this is why I'm kind of not I'm not happy with the agreements that he's talking about. And I think we can stop some of that. But we should be talking about fair trade. How's it going to benefit us? Because what I'm seeing, not going to happen. And with the other part of the progressive budget that they want to make sure that the minimum wage gets indexed so that it goes up as inflation goes up. There's part of me that says, you know, maybe you go to an earned income tax credit to where, you know, maybe you don't raise the minimum wage to appease the radical right, but you still give aid to the people at the bottom. Either way. I mean, this president was for a $9.50 an hour minimum wage. I think that's a good start. It's going to get some of those profits back. But we've got to do more. There's so many opportunities out there. And the president's right. It's not going to be government who does it, but it is going to be government who pushes it forward. You know, the right has been just gleeful, dancing for joy in the streets that the three solar companies filed bankruptcy. And why is that? Well, because we have these insane agreements with China mostly, who basically just bottomed out the price of solar panels. So it doesn't matter how good the technology was. If you can't compete on price, it's over. And like I said, had the government stepped in and said, you know what, we need them, we're gonna buy them. We're going to put them on low-income people's houses. We should be looking at doing more commercialization of solar power, more biomass, more wind energy, more creating our own energy. Instead of going the Republican route of just drilled baby drill so we can get the Texas oil man to fill his pockets and still keeping us dependent on the juice, we should be talking about how do we make everybody's homes energy independent? Well, Rick, there's no profit in that for big corporations. Sure there is. The people who make the panels, the people who make the windmills, the people who do the manufacturing and the installation, those are lots of jobs, lots of opportunities for innovation. There's going to be profit there. I know it's not long term. I mean, you're not going to get a monthly payment every month from the people who are off the grid, but it's a start. That's why all this alternative energy stuff's being destroyed. They haven't figured out how to make you pay for it every month. You know, back in the 70s, they were talking about how you make How do you make every home energy independent? You know, we call them green now. We need to have green construction, green buildings, you know, more energy efficient. That wasn't the language back when I was a kid. But it was the same concept. You know, we have the technology, and we've had the technology for quite some time to make sure that every home is energy independent. Every building creates its own energy and doesn't need the grid. You have the grid for a backup. But you have the ability to create your own and be independent. And this is something I would think, if you stop and really think about it, that the radical right, and especially the libertarian wing, would buy into. You're independent. You're free of the grid. You're off on your own, man. You're an individual. You would think, wouldn't you? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What's your thoughts? What'd you think of this speech? Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Or in the case of Michelle Bachmann, just crazy. Michelle's got some problems in her campaign. Looks like her head guy there, Ed Rollins, is leaving, claiming medical problems. So that's a campaign going straight downward. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Did you see the big speech tonight? I thought it was a good one. I thought he looked passionate. I think he looked decisive. I think he looked like he had a spine, which is a good thing. About time. Maybe the Labor Day rally with Hoffa, you know, gave him a little bit of boost. Maybe being around people who actually work for a living and actually have have some conviction actually helped him a little bit. There is some truth to hanging around with academics. Maybe got a little soft. We will see from this point forward. We're going to see if he gets out and does what he said. Goes to every corner of this country pushing this jobs bill. Because I think he's right. I think the American people want a jobs bill other than, oh, we're going to do more of the same, which is tax cuts for rich people, deregulate so corporations can pollute, and more of this insane free trade that he seems to be pushing as well. I think the American people want more than that. especially the tax cut thing. I think we've all had enough of that nonsense. We've seen that movie, and it's been a horror film. Anyway, one of the quotes of the day from Robert Reich. He writes in his piece, "The limping middle class. Look back over the last 100 years, and you'll see the pattern. During the periods when the very rich took home a much smaller portion of total income, as in the Great Prosperity between 1947 and 1977, the nation as a whole grew faster and median income surged." So as we spread the pie out more, as the wealthy, you know, got a little bit less, you know, their great 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 grandchildren might actually have to work. We took their money, you know, 15 generations down, and gave it to the working people, and they, you know what they did? They spent it. And that spending, you know what that did? That created jobs. So those people who didn't have them now had them. And you know what happened? They had money, and they spent it. And an odd thing happened. Money still went up to the top, and rich people were still rich. I mean, I go back to Rockefeller. How many people know the name Rockefeller? John D. Rockefeller. He paid an estate tax back in the 1930s of 70%. They took 70% of the money that he had. And do you know what? The Rockefeller family today, 80-some years later, still very wealthy. Still have you know, something in the refrigerator, something in the cupboards. I haven't missed many meals. See how that works? Interesting. Interesting thing. So did you see the debate last night? Did anybody miss that? With Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? Well, this Dorsey Shaw over at BuzzFeed did a little editing, because, you know, we don't have time to sit and watch 2 hours of debate. So Dorsey over at BuzzFeed, you know, broke it down into 45 seconds. And I think did a very, very good job, caught the essence of the debate. Here it is in 45 seconds.
We're going to get right to it tonight. A lot of issues to talk about.
Tax,
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 tax, tax, tax, tax,
tax,
taxes,
tax,
tax.
Ronald Reagan.
Reagan, 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 Ronald Reagan. Tax cut.
Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Reagan.
Tax. Ronald Reagan.
For Ronald Reagan.
President Reagan.
President Reagan.
I'm with President Reagan.
Tax, tax, and tax.
Reagan.
Tax. Ronald Reagan. Tax. Ronald Reagan. Tax increases and tax cuts.
Taxes. I didn't raise taxes. We had historic tax cuts.
Reagan. Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan
in the Reagan tradition.
The Ronald Reagan technique. Taxes. Tax. No tax. Tax with tax. I don't want to raise taxes. And taxes tax-free.
Tax break. Tax break. President Reagan pay no taxes.
And so our questioning will have to come to an end.
There you go, 45 seconds, everything you needed to know about last night's Republican debate, because all they talked about were, you know, how we're going to cut taxes and how we're going to save millionaires and billionaires, and how Ronald Reagan was this wonderful, just, you know, this mythical character. Although there was one point when Ron Paul actually let the truth kind of slip out, and I think he regrets it, when he said, look, you know, we ran up huge, huge deficits during the Reagan years, actually tripled the debt. We skyrocketed that thing. And they kept talking about taxes and Reagan, taxes and Reagan, taxes and Reagan, like Ronald Reagan was this great tax cutter, when the reality was, is while he did lower taxes, I think it was 4 times, he raised them 11 times. In fact, the one time he raised them was the biggest tax increase in the history of civilization. But we seem to have a very selective memory when it comes to Reagan and taxes, because, you know, 11 times in 8 years, that's pretty impressive. In fact, he raised taxes in 7 of his 8 years as president. So, again, you know, this kind of rewriting of history, this wonderful, you know, basically canonizing this guy as St. Ronald. Pretty, pretty impressive. But I look at Jan Schakowsky's bill, this Fairness and Taxation Act, something I think that absolutely has to be put into place, something we absolutely need, that the Republicans will fight tooth and nail. And what it basically does is anyone making over $1 million a year, your taxes are going up. Pretty simple. No $250,000, no couples, $1 million. You make $1 million, anywhere from $1 million to $10 million, you're going to pay 45% tax. Anywhere from $10 million to $20 million, 46. anywhere from 20 to 100 million, 47%. 100 million to a billion, 48%. And anything over a billion, 49%. So the guy who made the smart bet, I mean, he's not really smart. He had the money. He had the ability to make the bet. He made the bet, did the right timing, made $4 billion betting on Wall Street. He paid 15% tax. 15%, that's it. With the Schakowsky bill would say, you know what, we want you to have some money, but of that $4 billion, you're going to pay a little over $2 billion in taxes. Because the other thing it's going to do is any capital gains or any dividend income in that bracket going to be charged as income. Now, personally, I think all of that should be income regardless. You made the money off of interest, off of a bank account, off of a stock bet, whatever, should be income. Because it is. You're getting income. Why should the sweat of my brow be treated any different than laying down a bet? Personally, I think it should be the opposite way. If I'm out there busting my behind, swinging a hammer, or driving a truck, or out on a night like tonight, running wire to make sure people have electricity, or rescuing people in the river because the river's gonna crest and flood this city because there's an evacuation going on. Those people, why should they pay more in taxes than someone who's sitting in a posh apartment somewhere, living in the lap of luxury, laying down bets with a supercomputer? Explain that to me, because I'm missing the point on this. And I don't know how this Republican Party with a straight face can look to the working class of this country and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Worker, but we so need those rich people to create jobs for you because you're incapable of taking care of yourself. You need these benevolent dictators to oversee your lives because, you know, they know what to do with the money. Sorry, you don't. It's nonsense. It's ridiculous. But if you listen to them long enough, well, we need to give the money to the job creators. No, what you need to do is you need to give people money so they have money in their pocket and create demand. Demand creates jobs. I have yet to meet a business person. I've yet to meet a business person who tells me that a tax cut is going to create a job, and which is why I have a problem with some of Obama's ideas. Handing out tax cuts to folks to hire people, I don't know that's going to do it. Might be a short-term incentive just to get that quick money, but I don't know that that's it. You need the demand. We've tried the other way. We tried trickle-down. We tried supply-side. We tried it. Didn't work so well. But I think, you know, you look at this Tax Fairness Act, this Fairness in Taxation Act that Schakowsky's put out, smart policy. It's a step in the right direction, and it's not even where I would go. I would go back to the Reagan tax code. Which was 50%. Because, look at all of the things that are crumbling around us because we don't have the money to invest in it. And now we've got a president who's got to step forward and say, you know what, we've got to do this, and we're going to have to cut it from somewhere. So that means, you know, part of these cuts, you know, granny might see some cuts, and education might see some more cuts, and who knows what else. Because we have failed to invest. And I go back to the quote that he brought up to throw up to the Republicans. You know, during the Civil War, Lincoln found a way to build the Transcontinental Railroad, found a way to start the land-grant colleges, found a way, invested in the country. Do you think that could happen today with this Republican Party, who is not the Republican Party of Lincoln? If you went and if you go back and read the platform that Lincoln had, Lincoln would be fighting the people that are calling themselves the Republicans. There would be a major infight there. And what I'm saying is, my Lincoln Republicans, please take back your party. You are needed more than ever now. Because Reagan was not this myth that they have of Reagan. Sorry, not it. Not it at all. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our friend Abe Amoros, legislative director for the Laborers International Union. Right back after this. I got the time now. I'm going to take a chance. I want to get more. I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to take a chance.
Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James Hoffa says workers under attack from the radical right-wing Tea Party need to go to war politically to take out the Tea Party and pass policies that create jobs. Hoffa stands by those comments made this week at a Detroit Labor Day rally.
They got a war with us, and there's only going to be one winner. It's going to be the workers of Michigan and America. We're going to win that war. Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. And President Obama, we want one thing. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
A new report from the United Nations on Trade and Development says austerity policies designed to cut public debt and deficits will end up causing permanent recession. Report lead author, former German Deputy Finance Minister Heiner Flassbeck, says the exact opposite of austerity policies are what's needed to reverse economic decline for working people. He says unemployment is caused by sharply lower demand. With the private sector failing to produce demand, he says governments must step in with huge stimulus programs to reduce unemployment. Flassbeck says that current austerity programs are a disaster, and his report says much of the blame for the financial crisis resulted from deregulation of financial markets. The report calls for a reversal of austerity policies with increased wages, tighter regulation of financial markets, and huge government economic stimulus programs. Blood safety concerns and violations of the National Labor Relations Act has triggered a Red Cross worker strike in Michigan. Jesse Russell has more.
Red Cross workers are on strike in Michigan over blood safety and conditions for donors and employees. The strike comes after a National Labor Relations Board ruling that sided with employees' allegations that the Red Cross is in violation of the National Labor Relations Act. Workers say a strike could have been avoided. The next rounds of negotiations are scheduled for September 17th, according to the OPEIU, which represents some of the workers along with the Teamsters. Strikes will start in other states if safety concerns aren't addressed in Michigan. Workers are also protesting changes to health care and pensions that they say the organization made without negotiations. The workers have been without a contract since 2008.
Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union rallied on train tracks in Vancouver Wednesday to block a train destined for the Port of Longview in Washington State. Other locomotives were allowed to pass, but this one, hauling corn, was stopped due to a dispute with EGT, an international grain consortium workers say is intent on breaking the union. The consortium has been seeking nullification of an agreement that says the ILWU handles all commodities at the port. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Right here now, that was the president's call to Congress. Get this bill passed. Get these jobs created. Get these projects moving. And the clip, talking about roads and bridges and schools.
Private construction is all across America just waiting to get to work. There's a bridge that needs repair between Ohio and Kentucky that's on one of the busiest trucking routes in North America. A public transit project in Houston that will help clear up one of the worst areas of traffic in the country. And there are schools throughout this country that desperately need renovating. How can we expect our kids to do this in places that are literally falling apart? This is America. Every child deserves a great school, and we can give it to them if we act now.
Well, I'm playing to that patriotism. You gotta, and I think that's what you have to do. We're gonna have to shame them into doing what's right. Just amazing. Anyway, I've got our good friend Abe Amoros on the line. He's the legislative director for the Laborers International Union, LIUNA. Abe, what did you think tonight of the speech?
Well, Rick, I really think that you hit the nail on the head there. He basically said, look, here it is. I dare you guys and gals not to pass it. I dare you not to do the right thing. And, you know, it was forceful. It was bold. And he was basically putting it all out there that this needs to happen now. and that the American public doesn't have 14 months like everybody else in office right now. They don't have 14 months. Things have to get better starting today.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's a part of me that says the Republicans are going to do everything they can do to obstruct, because if it gets better, they fear that he'll be reelected. And I'm waiting to hear the blowback tomorrow, because he was forceful. He was someone who looked like finally someone gave him a spinal transplant. But I'm waiting for the angry black man comments to start coming out.
You know, you're going to get that, but I'm so glad that he behaved the way he did.
Absolutely.
When he was on the campaign trail. He showed some hunger. He showed some passion. He showed some zest. And you know what? He was finally standing up for the little guy in his term. You know, this is something that this president really is good at. I mean, when he is that demonstrative, when he's that sincere, when he's that passionate, he comes across to working people. And, you know, he came across pretty well to me tonight, and I hope that that resonates with everyone else. But you're right. You know what? And he has to stop worrying about what people are going to say about him.
Yep.
The next day. He has to go out there, and he has to speak the truth. And the truth is we need jobs, and we need jobs now.
Yeah, he needs to lose the rabbit ears, which I've accused him of having almost right from the beginning.
That's right.
But what he said is, you know, these projects have to, well, here's what he said.
And we'll set up an independent fund to attract private an issue based on two criteria: how badly a construction project is needed and how much good it will do for the economy.
So he's talking about an investment bank. How's it going to do for the economy, and how bad is it needed? Again, to me, not based on which congressman has the right committee, which pork belly is going to be filled, but where it's going to do the most good, and you know, where we're going to benefit from it.
That's exactly right. I mean, he was talking about common sense solutions to everyday problems, and you have to take the projects on their merits. And you know what? I'm happy that he's going to Ohio, because John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, is sitting in a district where 90 bridges need to be fixed. I mean, this is what we need to start attacking. We need to start going after the real problems out there. Pick out those projects that are the most important ones in the districts, and point them out to everybody, Democrat and Republican, but really into the Republican districts, because these guys have been obstructionists since day one. They wouldn't give this president an inch. And now they're toying with a crumbling infrastructure. They're toying with a higher jobless rate in America on political grounds, because they don't want to give this guy anything that he can hang his hat on for reelection next year.
You know, the reality is for every $1 billion we spend on infrastructure, you're looking at somewhere around 40,000 construction jobs being created.
That's exactly right, Reagan. If you listen to the speech, and I know you did very closely, the first thing out of his mouth was construction.
Absolutely. But here's the
thing.
That's
what we need.
You know, you look at the civil and structural engineers, the association that they have, and I forget it off the top of my head, but they're calling just for us to get up to date, just for us to bring our infrastructure up to just today, $2.2 trillion in investment are going to be needed, and to improve our infrastructure to 21st century quality, another $2 trillion. You're talking $4.2 trillion. How many jobs are we talking?
Oh, you're talking enough jobs to last a very long time and get us out of this economic tailspin. And the American Society for Civil Engineers really is a nonpartisan group that really just puts it out there and says, look, guys, this is where the projects are. This is how much it costs to fix it. Let's do it. And so these reports are important, but the underlying theme is that we can't wait another day for these good-paying jobs to be created. So then we can start moving America forward again.
So then the question then becomes, he gave a great speech, as he does. You know, you got to give him credit for that. He's an excellent orator. But how do we get him? He came out and forcefully said, pass it now. How do we make sure that we go from speech to action?
That's right. You know, he did come out swinging tonight. And now what we have to do is we as individuals, we have to basically say, all right, this is where he stands right now. He can't do it all by himself. He's going to need legislative action. And this is where activism comes in on our part. We have to visit our members of Congress and say, are you with the president on this or not? Are you with the people in terms of creating jobs and opportunities or not? Now is the time to hold our elected officials, meaning members of Congress, accountable to get their input on what they thought of the speech, what they thought of the policies, but most importantly, what they think of the concept of putting people back to work.
And paying taxes and having a disposable income to help the local communities. I mean, there's so much to this. The spiraling up prospects of this are monumental, in my opinion.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what's wrong with having good-paying jobs out there that lead to good wages, that lead to that kind of discretionary income that gets communities back? Not a thing.
You know, my producer came up with a couple of tweets that basically caught our eye in talking about the president's speech tonight. And it's one of those things where you go, really, is this your position? Representative Gordon was one of the guys talking about, you know, how we're bailing out the unions with his tweets, and how this is, you know, first we bailed out construction and now we're bailing out the teachers. I didn't hear any of that in the speech, did you?
No, I didn't hear any of that whatsoever. There was not a mention of a bailout. There was not a mention of unions in terms of being the problem. See, what they're trying to do is they're trying to demonize working people. That's all this is demonizing working people, and they want to make sure that those at the top continue to make more than those at the bottom. Keep taking from the bottom to enrich the top. That's the Republican mantra. It's been that way for the last 40 years. It's not going to change overnight. But what we need to do now is we have to stand up to those bullies because, Rick, for the past 3 years, they have been bullying this president.
Yep.
They have been bullying the Democrats. They've been bullying labor unions. They've been bullying working families. And the best way to deal with a bully is by standing up to them, look them dead in the eye, and that's what the president did tonight and said, are you going to pass this or not? And I think that we need to hold our members of Congress accountable. Are you going to pass this or not?
You know, we had Teamsters President Jimmy Hoffa here on the program the other night after the whole Fox debacle. And this is what Fox claims he said.
President Obama, this is your army. We are ready to march. Let's take these son of a out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much.
You know, I heard the Fox News version of it, and I'm going, yeah, about time. The only reality is he was talking about the true clip was this.
Everybody here has got a vote. If we go back and we keep the eye on the prize, let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much.
I like the Fox News version better. And there's part of me that thinks by just being around Hoffa, maybe this helps steal some of Obama's, some of the spine there.
You know, you're absolutely right, Reagan. And you know, there's one thing that's been missing from our side for the longest time. It's that outrage. The outrage that President Hoffa really embodied during that whole presentation. Nothing wrong with a little outrage, especially when you're getting the short end of the stick.
Yep.
Somebody's got to stand up and say, enough is enough, and push back a little bit. And you know what? Fox is notorious for twisting things around. It's not even a real news agency. It's more of an entertainment slash infomercial for Republicans more than anything else. Right-wing Republicans, that is. But, you know, getting back to the Hoffa statement, you know, there's some truth to that. We have been getting pushed around the recess yard for far too long.
Yep.
It's time to stand up, dust off, and start doing a little bit of pushback ourselves.
Yeah, because I listen to that, and the T-Twizzlers are just going nuts, always inciting violence, and I'm going, wait a minute. Coming from you, that's awful. That's awful funny, you taking a position that against violence.
That's right. Funny how the hypocrites don't want to be called hypocrites.
Exactly.
Because they have to look in the mirror, and they have to hold themselves accountable. And these guys hold themselves to a different standard, and it's just awful.
Well, the hope is now that labor...
No, I'm going to look at it now. Nothing. It's true.
Abe, you still there?
Still here.
Yeah, well, thought we lost you there for a second. Last question I've got for you. This American Jobs Act. To me, in my understanding, and maybe you can help me here, this is, I think, the first time the president has actually come with a direct proposal, take my act and pass this and act on it now. Can you recall anything else that he's come and laid out this specifically and said to pass this now?
No, in fact, this is the boldest I have seen the president. And you know, he's had a few weeks to prepare for this. His economic team has laid it out there for him, and it's good to see him with a little bit of chutzpah there. It's good to see him being forceful. It's good to see him go back to that passion that he had in 2008 when he originally campaigned, and he gave the base
some red meat, and
that's exactly what he needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad to see this. I wish he would have done it sooner, maybe with that health care debacle that ended up. If he'd have done this, I think he'd have been better off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, I mean, this should be a testament to every politician to really just go out there and speak your mind forcefully, truthfully, because on this one, he's on the side of the angels.
Absolutely. Abe Amorosa, I appreciate the time. Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time, Abe.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate your time.
Always great talking to you. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
There, fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
In the tortured language of corporate world, workers are no longer fired. They just experienced, quote, an employment adjustment. But the most twisted euphemism I've heard in a long time comes from DuPont. We are investigating the reports of these, quote, unfavorable tree symptoms, the pesticide maker recently stated. How unfavorable? Finito. Flatlined. The tree is dead. Not just one tree, but hundreds of thousands all across the country are suffering the final symptom. The culprit turns out to be Imprelis, a DuPont weed killer widely applied to lawns, golf courses, and, ironically, cemeteries. Rather than just poisoning dandelions and other weeds, the herbicide also seems to be causing spruces, pines, willows, poplars, and other unintended victims to croak. It's been devastating, says a Michigan landscaper who applied Imprelis to about 1,000 properties this spring and has already had more than a third of them suffer outbreaks of tree deaths. It looks like someone took a flamethrower to them, he says. At first, DuPont tried to dodge responsibility, claiming that landscape workers might be applying the herbicide improperly. The corporation even urged customers to be patient and leave the tree corpses on their lawns to see if they come back to life in a few years. However, faith-based landscaping was a hard sell. Disgruntled homeowners began filing lawsuits, and then DuPont had his own aha moment. Trees on the grounds of the DuPont Country Club also developed the unfavorable symptoms of Imprelis poisoning. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, with the cooperation of DuPont, the Environmental Protection Agency has finally banned the sales of the tree killer. But, because of inadequate testing and the corporation's rush to profit, the poison still remains in soils and water all across the country and will remain there for many moons, and the deaths will continue. Will we never learn?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy.
through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you've got one of these smartphones, get the Stitcher app. You can take your class war on the go. Just look for the Rick Smith Show there on Stitcher. The president was talking about collective bargaining.
I reject that we have to strip away collective bargaining rights to compete in a global economy.
And I'm right there with him. I reject the idea that we have to work for peanuts. I reject the idea that we have to work in an environment that's unsafe. I reject the idea that we have to work for less than minimum wage with no health care, no benefits, in an environment that is, well, less than safe. I reject the idea of going back to the years when I was a kid where you couldn't go in Lake Erie because it was so badly polluted. I reject the idea of going back to having to watch the evening news to see what the pollution content is in the air so that the asthmatics, like I was as a child, could go outside and play. I reject that idea completely. We should not, and we must not, and we will not go back to those days. That's it. Bottom line. And that's what collective bargaining has helped stop. Got an email during the break. And, of course, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all of them personally and quite often use them here on the program. Betty writes about talking about last night's show I am often a night or two behind in listening to your show, she writes. So this is in response to last night's show and the lack of labor history in schools. She says, I've been a public teacher for 22 years until now, thanks to Rick Perry, and have seen almost no mention of the labor movement. This is in stark contrast to my own education in Jewish schools in New Jersey. She talks about how she went through school, fourth, fifth grade, had people from the workmen's circle come in and talk about the fights that the Jewish people and labor went out and did. The fact that workers had the ability to come together to fight for fairness and equality. She talks about in high school how the message was even more specific, that they studied labor history. And they learned about how people stood together, and I'm sure she learned about the Triangle Shirtwaist fires. I'm sure she understood that. She said we were taught to revere the girls and the women of the ILGW. Those are the people who burned in the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. They weren't members, but the people around them. And to value their sacrifices as one of the factors that allowed us to study instead of work as teenage girls. So, again, you look at this and you stop and think about the conversation we had last night. That labor history has pretty much been wiped out of history textbooks in public schools. Pretty much, and anything you do here is always from a negative view. Any worker uprising was an insurrection that had to be crushed by the government because they were recalcitrant or they were out for no good. When the reality is, and I think bringing up the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, you had an industry of abused, exploited girls. That they would lock into these sweatshops. They'd lock the doors so they couldn't get out because, they might steal a scrap of something. And hundreds of them, I think it was like 162, or I forget the number off the top of my head, perished, jumping to their death out of the eighth floor. Why? Save those scraps. Now, they were members of the ILGW, but you know what they didn't do? They didn't agree with the company to bargain for conditions. So the company was able to lock those doors and they didn't have a say in it. So when I look at what's going on in Wisconsin and I look at what's going on in Ohio, where the governors in these states are saying, well, you can still negotiate over your wages, but not your benefits. Or you can negotiate over this, but not that. Or you can negotiate here, but not over here, because we're going to abuse you in those areas. Like these girls. We're going to lock the doors, and there's nothing you can say about it. And what it tells me is that we haven't done a good enough job of educating our young people. We haven't done a good enough job of telling them the story of the history of labor. You know, I think back to my own education in this. Because, you know, as I talked about with the guy last night, of course, if you want to hear that interview, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and listen to the podcast, or you can get it off of Stitcher. I remember my education in school was virtually nothing. Virtually nothing. I mean, we learned about the Molly Maguires, and they were criminals who were hung. That was basically the labor education I got in school. The labor education I got was at home. My grandfather was a Teamster for years. My grandmother was a member of the UFCW. They were both stewards on the jobs. They were both active in their unions. And they taught me that at home. This is how they made their lives better. You know, when they started out, they were homeless. Pregnant, homeless, nowhere to go. He just got out of the Army after World War II. Nowhere. And through their hard work and their dedication and their union, they retired in a solidly middle-class neighborhood, retired with security in their pension, retired with security and Social Security, retired in security with Medicare. And they lived a good number. My grandmother's still alive, 84 years old, living in her own home, able to take care of herself. Why? Because she has that security. What's happened over the last 30 years is they're taking that away from us. They're stealing that back. They don't want us to have that kind of security in wage, that kind of security in job, and that kind of security in old age. They don't. And they've destroyed the education. They've destroyed our ability to organize and to bring in a younger generation. And it's worked for them. Like I said last night, they should not have done the radical things that they've done. They shouldn't have done it. They were on the path to doing away with unions quietly. But now what they've done is they've awakened the sleeping giant. They've awakened people who are going to take to the streets. These people are going to fight because now they see it. It has smacked them right across the face. And you know what? They needed that. They needed the wake-up call. They needed to be smacked across the face. And those Republican members going, well, wait a second, that's not why I'm a Republican. I better start thinking about my job. Yes! What's what we've been saying for years. Now, look, I supported Republicans in the past who supported labor. You know, any friend of labor is a friend of mine. That simple. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about unemployment with Mitchell Hirsch of the National Unemployment Law Project. Right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Minimum wage!
You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you? It's like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. And again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast from our website and also with the Stitcher app on your smartphone. You know, tonight's speech, I think, spot on. And many, many, many fronts, especially the delivery. I saw him as very strong, steely-spined, not the weakling that he's been portrayed recently. So that's a good thing. But there's some stuff in this that, you know, we're going to have talk about over the next several days. And I'm hoping he gets out and he pushes his agenda and pushes this plan and gets them to push it on through. I've asked Mitchell Hirsch, National Employment Law Project, to come talk to us a little bit about the speech tonight. Mitchell, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. What did you think?
I was very encouraged. And particularly, I think the conversation that has shifted away from deficit and debt reduction to addressing the massive unemployment problem in this country is a very positive sign.
Yeah, the idea that somehow we were going to be able to cut, gut, and punish our way out of this, just to me it seems illogical, but that we can slash and burn our economy and somehow that's going to create wealth, I'm missing the point there.
Well, the part of the problem is that the stimulus plan that was passed in 2009, as you know, only lasts so long.
Right.
And what we've seen is that as the stimulus funding and spending has been replaced increasingly by austerity measures, especially at the state and local level, but now also at the federal level, the growth rates in the country have basically flatlined,
yep,
and so have the job growth.
Yeah, the job numbers, zero job creation, doesn't tell the story that there were private sector jobs created, but that we just threw that many, the equal amount of people out of a state and local and federal employment.
Yeah, so I think that the administration is acutely aware of the fact that we are dangerously close to sliding back into what would technically be called another recession or a double dip recession, that would be potentially even more damaging than the initial downturn long term for the country. And with so many people out of work, adding that burden to the economy in terms of the inability to create enough jobs is really, really a serious issue. So I was very heartened by a lot of what the president said. I think his call for extending the full federal unemployment insurance program for another year
step in the right direction.
Spot on.
Yep.
Also, one thing that he did not highlight in the speech but was in the White House documents that were circulated, and we got a chance to look at afterwards. He's called for legislation in the package that would prohibit discrimination against people who are out of work from being considered for jobs by employers, recruiters, staffing firms, and in job postings, and I think that's a big step forward.
That's huge. And, but here's the thing. If you look at a lot of the tax incentives and quick numbers that we saw, you know, while the first stimulus package or the Recovery Act or whatever you want to call it had about 40% of the money going towards tax cuts or incentives, the numbers that I'm seeing are upwards of 60% going towards tax cuts or incentives of some sort. And most of those were targeted at hiring the long-term unemployed.
Well, I don't know how that's going to work exactly. We'll have to see how the plan actually evolves. But if tax cuts are targeted to support hiring of unemployed workers, I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, he said right in the speech.
I think just throwing tax cuts at businesses willy-nilly obviously does not work.
Right.
We saw that in the prior recession. We had a jobless recovery after the 2001 recession, and those kinds of tax cuts have not really spurred job creation in this recovery.
But he said in the speech that, you know, anyone who hires one of the folks who are beyond the 26 weeks would get a tax cut of $4,000. So that's where that was coming from. The idea of trying to get those folks into the front of the line to get jobs. This, he threw out the Georgia plan, if you will, trying to get the extended unemployed, and I don't like the idea. I think it's a bad idea, but it's an idea, I guess. We're going to have to see where it goes, that these folks who are long-term unemployed, they go to work for these companies for free, I guess, for 8 weeks. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there are some problems with the Georgia Works program as it has existed. So we're going to need to see how this plan would be modified. The president's plan apparently does want to address some of the problems with that plan in terms of minimum wage laws, wage and hour laws, classification of workers as trainees instead of employees, and the like. But the important thing is not to harm the underlying fundamentals of the principles of the unemployment insurance system. The basic problem with the Georgia Works program, which essentially is not working in Georgia at the moment. There's only 19 people currently in the program, and the current state labor commissioner is not that enthusiastic about it and says there's been weak oversight of employers in the program. But the main problem is that it takes people who are receiving unemployment insurance and puts them in so-called training positions without being paid, and their only compensation other than a travel subsidy is their current unemployment insurance benefit.
Right.
And the problem with that is it takes unemployment insurance and turns it into subsidized work, subsidized employment. And those two types of programs should be separate.
I agree.
We support subsidized employment programs like the TANF EF program, the emergency fund program, and the MEAD program that existed in Minnesota for many years that worked very well. That kind of program would be a better approach than the Georgia Works program, which kind of undermines the purpose of unemployment insurance, which is to support people in their job searches after they've lost a job through no fault of their own.
And here's my problem with it, and I've talked about, you know, instead of giving extended unemployment benefits, actually using money to hire folks to do work that needs to be done in the community, that using government as the employer of last resort. What they're doing is they're kind of taking my idea there and putting them into the private sector. And what I worry about is that that's going to cause those employers to then lay people off, putting them on the unemployment rolls because they think that they're going to be able to get folks to fill those jobs for free.
Yeah, I agree. So we're going to have to see how the details on this kind of plan work out, but the issue of addressing the discrimination factor is a big step forward. I'm not sure you saw this, but over the last few days, the job website Indeed.com issued a statement that they would no longer carry job postings that had language like must be currently employed or unemployed candidates need not apply. The what's happening, I think, overall, in the context of this discrimination piece and the president's plan overall, is that Washington is now having to respond to what the American people have been crying out about for the last 2.5 years.
Yep.
And that is they need jobs. They need good jobs. We need the unemployment insurance system strong. We need social insurance that is strong. And we need a competitive industrial base that puts people back to work producing American-made products.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Then he went into free trade agreements that we know are going to kill jobs.
Well,
I mean, that's where it went for me. I liked the speech.
Past experience, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's what worries me.
And it was interesting to watch the responses and reactions of people in the room. But the trade agreements being tied to TAA, to trade adjustment assistance for displaced workers, is something that is absolutely essential.
I agree.
I mean, they cannot pass these trade pacts without strengthening the trade adjustment assistance program.
And I wish they would strengthen the rights of workers in this country to organize. Were you surprised that he brought up collective bargaining in his speech?
I was somewhat. And I was really happy about it. I did not expect that. And that was really one of the most resounding responses that I think he got in the room was when he said, you know, I do not agree with those who want to strip away collective bargaining rights in this country.
Yep.
I reject that we have to strip away collective bargaining rights to compete in a global economy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with him. You know, one last thing I've got, you know, before we wrap up, I think it was a great speech. But, you know, he didn't talk about raising the minimum wage, which I was kind of thinking might come out of this. What we've seen from, and this isn't a political, I know you guys are straight down the middle, but last night Ron Paul was asked about doing away with the minimum wage, and well, here's his response.
Do you advocate getting rid of the minimum wage? Would that create more jobs?
Absolutely, and it would help the poor, the people who need a job. The minimum wage is a mandate. We're against mandates, so why should we have it? No, it would be very beneficial.
Do you think it would help the poor? Do you think getting rid of the minimum wage would help the poor?
Oh, sure. Let's make the poor poorer by getting rid of the minimum wage. You know, this is craziness.
What should we raise the minimum wage to? I mean, you know, then I'll hear people say, well, just raise that minimum wage up to $100 an hour, because you always get the extremists who want to throw out the most outrageous thing. What should it be?
No, it should be somewhere in the 950 to 10 and a quarter range. It should be at least you know, on a par with what it would have been if it would have been increased on an inflation factor over the last 25 years. I mean, there's no question that people making minimum wage now are, in fact, earning less in terms of spending power than they were 25, 30 years ago.
You know,
that's ridiculous.
My one hope for President Obama when he took office back in January of 2009, that he would be remembered as the guy who saved work in this country, the reward of work. Because I got to be honest with you, I don't think that you should go toil for 40 hours doing anything and still be in poverty.
I couldn't agree more. We need not just jobs, and this is something that that I don't think has been focused enough on. We of course we need more jobs. We need millions of more jobs. There's a jobs deficit of more than 11.2 million jobs in this country that now exists right now.
Right.
Since the recession began. If you take the 6.9 million jobs that were lost since the start of the recession that have not been recovered yet, and another 4.4 million that are needed just to keep up with population growth, you know, that's a huge gap. The president's plan begins to address that. It doesn't make up the whole 9 yards, 10 yards, but it begins to address that, and it's a significant step forward, and I agree with the president. The Congress should pass it now, but it's not just jobs, any jobs. It's good jobs, jobs that are productive jobs, jobs that can sustain a family, that pay enough to create a future for American working people.
Yeah, and not the kind of job like we see in the big box retail industry where you can get food stamps and Medicaid by working. To me, that's just plain wrong. Mitchell Hirsch, I appreciate the time. National Employment Law Project. I guess you have the website unemployedworkers.org. Is that your personal site?
Not my personal site. No, the National Employment Law Project has a dedicated website for laid-off workers, and it's, strangely enough, called unemployedworkers.org.
Okay.
Go there. We've got a very active community, and there are links on the homepage up in the upper right-hand corner where you can tell your story about how important unemployment insurance has been for you if you're unemployed and receiving unemployment insurance. And there's another story page if you've had a direct experience where you've been told by a recruiter or a staffing firm or a hiring agency that you wouldn't be considered for a job just because you're currently out of work. There's a story page there for that.
All righty. Unemployedworkers.org. That's what we've got linked at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Mitchell Hirsch's name. It'll take you right there. Mitchell, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Tom Nielsen, the gentleman who was arrested at Paul Ryan's office at his pay-per-view town hall. Back after this.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one, call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
Walker is Mubarak.
Madison, Cairo, fascism track, next stop Ohio. Trying to kill labor, that's their jihad, huh? What's gonna happen when the people all rise up? Sad thing is so...
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Ever check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last night we talked about the pay-per-view town hall in Wisconsin that Representative Paul Ryan held. You know, I guess just to keep those people, that rabble out. Well, there were a bunch of people who paid the money to get in, and sadly enough, 20 of them were thrown out and 3 were arrested. I've got Tom Nielsen on the line, one of the folks who was arrested. Tom, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes.
Tell me, what took you to the pay-per-view town hall? Why'd you go?
Well, I got invited to come along to a rally for Paul Ryan. He has totally been neglecting the people from Wisconsin who are looking for jobs, and he won't hold town meetings or anything with them. And so we've been doing some sit-ins at his place, and we have been kind of marching with signs in front of his office on Sheridan Road in Kenosha. And he keep ignoring us. So they said, here, let's, we finally got him. He's going to be there for sure, so let's go there. So I think they bought something like 30 tickets or something like that at $15 a piece for lunch
right
up there, or maybe 20 tickets. And he was just handing out tickets. He said, hey, you want to go for lunch? Okay, here's the ticket, you know. And so I went in for the lunch, and I went in on another name. But that's because that person bought the ticket. He donated the money for the ticket. And somebody had to get the money, so he had to go for the luncheon.
Right. So you went for lunch to hear your representative speak, which I got to be honest with you right up front. I don't think you should have to pay to see your representative. That seems to be a new phenomenon going on across the country. We got a guy up here where we're at in central Pennsylvania trying to pull the same garbage. But, you know, one of the things that I read that you had heard him say that most of the debt that, you know, is on the future comes from entitlement programs like Social yes. Security and Medicare. And I think you've got the right take on it, which is...
Yeah, I stood up and complained about Social Security and Medicare was an entitlement. I said, I've been paying for this to over 50 years. See, I'm 71 years old, okay? I said, I've been paying for this over 50-some years. What this entitlement thing, where does that come from? And then 3 guys grabbed me and took me out backwards, get me off balance out in the back room, and they laid me down on the floor and cuffed me and took me out.
71 years old, they took you to the floor.
Yeah, 3 of them. And one guy tried to break my wrist. He had my wrist so bent. I said, please don't hurt me. I got a broken clavicle. 4 weeks ago, I was in a car accident. I said, my clavicle is broken. You know what? That didn't make any difference to them. They had me, and they were glad they had me.
You know,
I think them guys, they get a personality change when they put on that uniform in the morning, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. I absolutely hear you on this. You know, but I look at someone like Paul Ryan, and what's most disgusting about your representative is he's a guy who, when his father passed away, and I don't begrudge anyone of this, but when his father passed away, he was able to get Social Security survivor benefits that helped pay for his way through college.
Yeah.
And now he is a guy out on the forefront trying not to destroy the very program that he benefited from.
Yeah, what's with that? And his kids, he got little kids. You know, he's only 41 years old. He got little kids, and they're growing up. And someday he's gonna somebody in his family is gonna benefit from these programs, and they're not entitlement programs. But I think what says something about him. He used to be an Oscar Mayer Wiener salesman. Did you know that?
That does not surprise me.
No.
I've often said he was an LMV, a lunch money victim, but that's a whole different, which explains why he's the way he is, in my opinion. But I look at this and look, at the end of the day, you were right. You have paid into Social Security. The promise that we've made to you and your generation and to all workers is that in old age, we're going to be secure.
Yeah.
And they're trying to break that compact.
They're also trying to break, I was a union member for over 40 years. For the local 118 plumbers and steamfitters local in Kenosha and Racine here, and they're trying to break that union too.
Yeah, well, it's a fundamental change that the Republicans have been fighting for years. They want to take us back to the 90s, Tom. They want to take us back to the 1890s, where you had robber barons and peasants.
Yeah.
Scary, scary stuff. So tell me, you were arrested. They cited you. Will you have a trial? Is this just a fine thing? Tell me about the arrest and the and what happened.
Well, they had paddy wagons sitting out in back, so they were anticipating something. They hired police from a police station in the neighborhood called West Alice. We were in Greenfield, so there's West Alice police there. Arrested me, I think, but they took me to Greenfield Police Station because it was in the town of Greenfield that this arrest was happening. But they arrested me for trespassing. I had a ticket. They arrested me for resisting arrest. I was merely trying to protect my shoulder so they wouldn't break it again. Okay, and I was not doing anything. I'm gonna fight three young guys, and I know not to fight these guys because you never win anyway. So therefore, just when they got you, they got you.
You're a 71-year-old guy that they took to the ground.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of a threat you were. And I saw the video. I don't know how much of a threat you could have been to them.
I don't know. I'm 6'4", and I weigh 235 pounds. And them guys are not that big. So maybe they figured they needed a body program, okay, for that arrest.
Yeah, I got to be. So where does this go? Do you go to trial?
I go to trial. I haven't been informed yet. They gave me a trial date, but that's not the right one because they said they had to organize that with the police officer who arrested me because he has to be there.
Right.
And it totals up to about $1,000.
Wow. Now is anyone $629
for resisting arrest, and I didn't.
Wow. So
$329 or something like that for trespassing, which I didn't.
Yeah, I don't know how you can be trespassing when you're there with a ticket.
No.
I'm not getting that one, which I'm sure any decent lawyer will get you out of, which leads me to the next question. Is anyone helping secure an attorney so that you have someone representing you at the trial?
Yes, I will be represented, and I was informed that the Jobs of Wisconsin was going to take care of everything. Jobs for Wisconsin?
Jobs Wisconsin. WisconsinJobsNow.org is the website.
Yeah,
which
that's
I hope
the one. They'll take care of it.
Which I hope folks will go to and check out. We've got a link to Tom Nielsen's name, so WisconsinJobsNow.org. Well, that's a good thing that at least you're going to get some representation, and that's not going to cost you.
No, and these lawyers, I think, work for this company for nothing because they are involved in the Jobs for Now. Okay, so.
Because at the end of this, I would have to think that, you know, one, having to pay to see your representative to me is criminal. But two, you were there with a ticket. You were there as, you know, someone who I paid my money. I have a question. I want it answered. And they threw you out. To me, the crime was committed against you, not by you.
I was told I should file police brutality. But it is not my call since I'm being represented by somebody.
Right.
So I went to the doctor today because I had a regular visit for healing observation on my shoulder, and he says, "Well, you're not healed yet." He says, "So you better keep wearing that sling." Well, I didn't wear a sling up there because I didn't want to bring attention to that, you know. So I just put my hand in my pocket and walked around kind of leisurely, you know.
But, last question I've got for you, Tom. You know, when you went to the luncheon, why were you there? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you going, you know, the responsible citizen to cause trouble. I can only imagine that you went to ask an honest question and to have your voice heard.
Yes, and hear what he had to say in his defense, you know, of how he, why he takes the stance he does on certain issues. And when he was telling me that entitlement programs is ruining the nation's economy. That took me over the top. I said, what in the world is he going to spew up there? This is incorrectness, if not lies.
And it's flat out wrong.
And so I stood up and says, if you please clarify that a little bit, you know? And you don't get a chance to get an answer. You just get hauled out of there.
Yeah,
and then he said, I hope this man took his blood pressure medicine before when he got up this morning.
So, what a snot. But
Tom, I'm in perfect health. I don't need blood pressure medicine.
Tom, I just absolutely the best to you. I want to thank you for standing up and thank you for being someone who's willing to stand up against this, really this injustice. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Tom Nielsen. WisconsinJobsNow.org is the website. I wonder, if we can kick a couple of bucks over his way to help pay any fines or fees or anything that comes up. We're going to look into that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, from the Spin Room after the speech with the president. Right back after this.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James Hoffa says workers under attack from the radical right-wing Tea Party need to go to war politically to take out the Tea Party and pass policies that create jobs. Hoffa stands by those comments made this week at a Detroit Labor Day rally.
They got a war with us, and there's only going to be one winner. It's going to be the workers of Michigan and America. We're going to win that war. Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. And President Obama, we want one thing. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
A new report from the United Nations on Trade and Development says austerity policies designed to cut public debt and deficits will end up causing permanent recession. Report lead author, former German Deputy Finance Minister Heiner Flassbeck, says the exact opposite of austerity policies are what's needed to reverse economic decline for working people. He says unemployment is caused by sharply lower demand. With the private sector failing to produce demand, he says governments must step in with huge stimulus programs to reduce unemployment. Flassbeck says that current austerity programs are a disaster, and his report says much of the blame for the financial crisis resulted from deregulation of financial markets. The report calls for a reversal of austerity policies with increased wages, tighter regulation of financial markets, and huge government economic stimulus programs. Blood safety concerns and violations of the National Labor Relations Act has triggered a Red Cross worker strike in Michigan. Jesse Russell has more.
Red Cross workers are on strike in Michigan over blood safety and conditions for donors and employees. The strike comes after a National Labor Relations Board ruling that sided with employees' allegations that the Red Cross is in violation of the National Labor Relations Act. Workers say a strike could have been avoided. The next rounds of negotiations are scheduled for September 17th, according to the OPEIU, which represents some of the workers along with the Teamsters. Strikes will start in other states if safety concerns aren't addressed in Michigan. Workers are also protesting changes to health care and pensions that they say the organization made without negotiations. The workers have been without a contract since 2008.
Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union rallied on train tracks in Vancouver Wednesday to block a train destined for the Port of Longview in Washington State. Other locomotives were allowed to pass, but this one, hauling corn, was stopped due to a dispute with EGT, an international grain consortium workers say is intent on breaking the union. The consortium has been seeking nullification of an agreement that says the ILWU handles all commodities at the port. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Often as we've played that song in talking about the Obama administration, you can't say that tonight. Came out with fire in his eyes, a little spit and vinegar. And look, at the end of this, this is what I've been calling on him to do from day one. Give up that image that, oh, they're going to look at me as the angry black guy. Be the angry black guy. Go out there and say, look, we're going to do what we came here to do, and that's create jobs and get people back to work and get this economy working again for average, everyday working people. Good for him. I'm hoping now it goes from the rhetoric stage to the actual doing stage. And I think maybe he got the message. Maybe being around Hoffa on Monday, maybe it wore off a little bit. Anyway, let's find out what's going on in the after party, what's going on after the speech. We've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much. Actually, most of the Democrats were very supportive. All of the Republicans were not in the spin room afterwards. Bernie Sanders was one of the few people that had something kind of interesting to say. He said, you know, we're going to reduce the payroll tax, and then what happens to Social Security?
Right.
Yeah. And that is clearly a concern and has not been addressed.
Well, I've talked about that from the beginning when they proposed it the first time, that it was a bad idea then. We could have done some other things that would have made it easier, I think. But at the end of the day, we've still got to do something, I think, to get the economy kick-started. And I think a lot of the proposals he threw out, and I could go through and pick at the ones I don't like. The Georgia plan, I think, is a horrible idea. But I think that's going to be some red meat for the Republicans to pick over.
Well, definitely some red meat, and they already started in the spin room with red meat. Everybody from Alan West to Senator Lee from Utah. I mean, they were all basically going after it. And you said, well, what do your constituents want? Well, our constituents want, you know, good jobs.
Yep.
But what does that mean? And how are you going to get it? They're just not created out of nothing.
Well, I mean, the Republican mantra has been in the same failed policies that got us into this mess. More tax cuts for the wealthy, more deregulation so we have water that you can't drink and air you can't breathe, and, of course, more free trade. Again, the president jumped on the free trade wagon, not thrilled with that, but still, at the end of this, that's the Republican mantra, the holy trinity there for them.
Yes. And that is something that they were coming out of it saying, that they support free trade. But I wanted to say, well, how did, and I did ask, I said, well, jobs went away with NAFTA, as I always call it, NAFTA Shafta. And, you know, no real response. I mean, these guys, as a friend of mine who has been a press person for a number of years, he said, you could put a microphone in somebody and say, eat. And you can imagine what the word would be. And they're just going to go on with their spin. And then, you know, it was interesting that you can always tell what talking points they have, because if you speak to two or three members of Congress and they have the same talking points, you know what's going on there.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting is Peter Peterson put out a statement. He's got this Peter Peterson Foundation. It's worth $8 billion.
Oh, I know.
He was Secretary of Commerce, I think, under
Nixon. I think.
Yeah, Nixon. And he basically put out a statement saying, you know, we have to watch our cutting and all that. But he was not as negative towards the president that I actually thought Peter Peterson and company would come out with.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of tax cutting in there. I mean, the numbers that I've seen, while the Recovery Act was 40% in tax cuts and incentives, this is upwards of 60% in tax cuts and incentives. So business is going to get they're going to get a fair share of money in their pocket as well.
That's right. To say they absolutely will, and the fact is that the president wants this passed. So far, the legislation doesn't exist, but of course, the White House might have it totally written and might drop it tomorrow, for all we know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because, you know, as he talked about it, it seemed to me that he had already had this put together and there was a plan in place, which is something that I don't think, maybe you know, but I don't think he's done this in the past, and I wish
he would have. No, he has not
done
it in the past. This is very new for him. And one analysis that I read just came out a few minutes ago, basically said, well, this is the president's, you know, campaign speech, and instead of going on the streets or whatever to announce, he just basically did it here because this is the Obama that, in terms of the cadence, in terms of what he was presenting, is the Obama that a lot of people thought they were getting.
Well, absolutely, right on. I wanted that decisive guy, that guy who's going to stand up and say, "This is where we're going. I'm leading the way. Follow me. Pass this now. Do what I say." That's what I think most people thought they were getting, and what they got was a delegator.
Absolutely, they did get a delegator, but tonight he came out swinging, and I think it was pretty. I don't agree with him. You know, everything in it for sure. But I thought it was certainly, I cannot see Speaker Boehner giving a speech like that.
Did you see Boehner, though? I watched him, you know, through most of the speech.
Oh, yeah.
He was taking notes on anybody clapping. I'm going after those people. He was absolutely taking notes. Didn't stand once, I don't think.
No. Well, I actually, the speaker doesn't usually stand, but often can clap.
Yeah, that was very, very timid, though.
Which he did not, basically.
Not much there. But again, you know, I think the construction stuff, the infrastructure, lots needs to be done. There's lots out there. I'm not fond with the Georgia plan. I think that's a dumb idea. But, you know, here again, we're going to have to, I guess, walk through that as well. So for me, good speech. 9/11's coming up in just a couple of days. I see now that they claim there are some credible threats. How much of this is accurate? How much of this is...
Well, I don't know. I mean, the, you know, I talked to a couple of cynical people tonight, and they thought, well, you know, they were just putting this out there as a way of making sure if anything does happen, they're kind of covered. But it seems like there was, they intercepted something having to do with trucks. That might be having car bombs. And apparently there are two trucks that were rented in Kansas, I think, that are missing and they can't find them.
Interesting. I'm sure we will find those one way or another. I was going to say probably coming through the Mexican border that we're probably not going to be keeping our eye on very much longer with this the opening up the southern border to the Mexican domicile trucks.
Yes, well, that is a huge, huge, huge problem.
No.
But I know the way it was presented was enough that people were talking about that tonight and were awfully scared about it.
So Trader Joe Lieberman chimed in?
Yeah, Trader Joe Lieberman. Now, he's pretty good on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So, you know, he's a mixed bag, to say the least. Basically, he chimed in. And said that he was worried that the United States was not going to be ready if there was another attack because we've become so partisan in the last 10 years. I thought that was kind of an interesting point of view.
Well, I mean, I think it's accurate.
If there was another attack, could we come together?
I think we probably could if we, you know, I think there may be enough sane people left that you could get, you know, what you need. I mean, the fringe, you're obviously not going to. The lunatic fringe will be off on their own. But I think right now there's still some rational people. Your thoughts?
Yes, I think there are rational people. And, you know, it was interesting that even though they didn't clap tonight and the Republicans weren't, you know, saying nothing terribly positive, they didn't seem to be have the edge that sometimes they have coming out of State of the Union. It could be the time of year. It could be that they, as John Thune said, senator from South Dakota, said, you know, when he went home, he found that people in their town meetings were just said, hey, get it done.
Yep. They took a thumping back home.
That's right.
A couple of quick questions. David Vitter, was he there?
You know, David Vitter was not only there, but he had dinner next to us.
So he wasn't there?
He was there.
Oh, he was. I thought he was going to be, you know, I guess they had a big diaper sale down there in Louisiana before the football game.
No, he was eating dinner alone next to us.
Interesting. How about Joe Walsh? How about the Republican from Illinois? I know he's got his child support problems where he's trying to crush his wife for how dare she ask for child support. Was he there? He claimed he wasn't going to be.
I did not. You know, the senators were much easier to keep track of because of they had to actually come from the Senate chamber into the House chamber like they have to at State of the Union. So we saw every one of the senators go in. We didn't see any of the House members go in. And he did not come back out. Afterwards, so I didn't see him.
Yeah, Mr. Family Values,
yes,
Mr. Fiscal Responsibility. Take care of your families and your children, and except for me. I mean, that makes, as a Republican Party, they should ostracize that guy. I mean, just out of basic messaging.
Well, they've been known to keep some creeps around.
Yeah, well, there's one right there. Anybody who would do that to their own flesh and blood, man, I'll tell you. That'll take them out back, and well, like my grandfather said, that you can make a citizen out of somebody real quick. A good backhand always helps. So there you go. Last question: on the ABC scale, what do you give the speech tonight?
I give it an A+.
All right, wow.
I think the president was in rare form tonight.
Good, good.
How about you?
I was going to say like a B+, A-.
Really? Yeah. No, I think for the of all the speeches, and I hear a lot of them, the president gives since he's been president. I think this is probably the best.
Yeah, for the delivery, A+. The content, B+, maybe.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd probably go with you on the content. I may even go a little lower on the content, but delivery and passion, he was back to his old self.
Yeah, I'm saying it was that weekend with Hoffa, maybe a little bit wore off on him.
Ha! Huh.
There you go. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Interesting stuff coming out of D.C. Let's take a quick break right back after this. We're going to talk about the ILWU strike going on out on Longview, Washington when we come back. This is going back to the old days. I can't wait to hear about this. Right back after this.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
In the tortured language of corporate world, workers are no longer fired. They just experienced, quote, an employment adjustment. But the most twisted euphemism I've heard in a long time comes from DuPont. We are investigating the reports of these, quote, unfavorable tree symptoms, the pesticide maker recently stated. How unfavorable? Finito. Flatlined. The tree is dead. Not just one tree, but hundreds of thousands all across the country are suffering the final symptom. The culprit turns out to be Imprelis, a DuPont weed killer widely applied to lawns, golf courses, and, ironically, cemeteries. Rather than just poisoning dandelions and other weeds, the herbicide also seems to be causing spruces, pines, willows, poplars, and other unintended victims to croak. It's been devastating, says a Michigan landscaper who applied Imprelis to about 1,000 properties this spring and has already had more than a third of them suffer outbreaks of tree deaths. It looks like someone took a flamethrower to them, he says. At first, DuPont tried to dodge responsibility, claiming that landscape workers might be applying the herbicide improperly. The corporation even urged customers to be patient and leave the tree corpses on their lawns to see if they come back to life in a few years. However, faith-based landscaping was a hard sell. Disgruntled homeowners began filing lawsuits, and then DuPont had his own aha moment. Trees on the grounds of the DuPont Country Club also developed the unfavorable symptoms of Imprelis poisoning. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, with the cooperation of DuPont, the Environmental Protection Agency has finally banned the sales of the tree killer. But, because of inadequate testing and the corporation's rush to profit, the poison still remains in soils and water all across the country and will remain there for many moons, and the deaths will continue. Will we never learn?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
We don't get it!
Shut him down!
If we don't get it!
Shut him down!
We don't get it!
Shut him down!
If we don't get it!
Shut him down!
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Our quote of the day comes from ILWU President Bob McElrath, who on the picket line there said, it shouldn't be a crime to fight for good jobs in America. And you got to agree with that. What's going on out in Longview, Washington, one of these moments where you go, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the big corporations or are you on the side of the working people? So I've asked Craig Merrilees, communications director for the ILWU, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, to come talk to us. Craig, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, listen, it's great to be with you and all the listeners out there. So a big shout out to everyone out there in the Rick Smith Show.
I appreciate you taking time. I know you guys are busy. This harkens back to strikes of the old days where you got workers actually holding up trains because, look, at some point, this is going to have to come to a head, right?
You know, this is all taking place in a little town on the Columbia River called Longview. And what's amazing here is that the big company that came into town, promised lots of jobs, asked for taxpayer subsidies, turned around and then reneged on the deal and said they weren't going to provide the union jobs that they'd already agreed to and broke their contracts with the Port of Longview. This is a company that operates in a lot of third world countries, and I think they've tried to do the same thing here in Longview that they do regularly overseas. And what's amazing is that folks are drawing the line in Longview. They're organizing and they're taking action, and they're not being shy about it. They are going into third gear here with a very aggressive campaign to teach this company and others like it a lesson that they're not going to be walked on, and that the working people in that community are going to rise up and give these guys hell that they deserve.
And they absolutely deserve the hell. And you said for a second, in third world countries, the workers there get walked on. I'll tell you, here in this country, it's come to that. I mean, you look around and you see all of the abuses that are happening here. So when I see a story where working people are actually taking to the streets, are actually saying enough already, we're going to fight you tooth and nail, I got to say good on you and let's do more of it.
You know, I got phone calls from people all over the country today. I got phone calls from truck drivers who were waiting in line at the port and couldn't go to work today because the longshore workers walked off the job and did it to send a message. And their message was, we are not going to take this kind of treatment anymore. We are not going to be pushed around by corporate America. And when they renege on their promises, we're going to call them on it. We're going to draw the line. And we're going to make their life hell.
Absolutely. And at the end of this, what we have to start really hammering on is class solidarity. Not just the longshoremen going out, but like you said, the truck drivers saying, yeah, we're not going to do that either. And, you know, all across the industries, like my grandfather's generation used to do, like they understood, look, we're just going to shut it down until this gets dealt with.
You know, we're in a time right now that doesn't make a lot of sense to most of us. It seems confusing. You know, the promises, the commitments, the understanding we had about the way America was supposed to work doesn't make sense. But it makes sense to the older generation, to the older pensioners, to the grandparents. They lived through the Depression. They know what it's like when corporate America gets the upper hand. And today we're living in the same kind of situation. And I think the members of the Longshore Union have decided that it requires some of the same kind of action, the same kind of sacrifice. They walked off the job today in Portland, in Tacoma, hundreds of workers. They went down to Longview to support that community where people are fighting and taking on the corporate greed down there. And they walked right into the plant. They opened the doors of those hopper cars that were carrying grain into this non-union operation. And that grain went all over the ground, and they walked out, and they felt like they'd done something to make a powerful statement to that company that they were not going to be pushed around and take it for granted anymore.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of action, you know, and look, at the end of the day, you got to stand up and fight for yourselves. And if it takes things like that, that's what it takes. Now, the media report that I saw was, oh, you destroyed these railroad cars. And look, I'm going, they're steel. How do you destroy a railroad car? But the messaging that's coming out of it is, well, you guys are being violent and you guys are being recalcitrant and you're not falling into line like good Stockholm victims.
Look, you know, the kind of crime that is taking place every day in America with white-collar criminals that are stealing billions of dollars from American taxpayers, companies like GE that aren't not just paying taxes, they're getting tax subsidies by hundreds of millions of dollars and hundreds of more corporations just like them that think they can literally get away with murder and expect the average American working family to carry the load for them. It's just outrageous. And when you compare that kind of crime to folks that, you know, may have engaged allegedly in trespassing and may have, you know, opened the doors on the hopper cars, and, you know, they don't compare. We're dealing with world-class criminals when it comes to Wall Street, and they're not getting a finger laid on them. And it's no wonder that people are so angry, so frustrated, and fed up. They don't feel like the government supports them. They feel like corporate America is betraying them. And I think it's high time. And a lot of people called today and said, God bless the longshoremen. they're finally standing up and doing what a lot of us have felt like doing for a long time.
And I'm right there with them. Anytime I see folks standing up and fighting back, I'm right there with them. You know, some of the pictures that I've seen, and there have been some, I wish there were more, basically of just peaceful protesters, workers with their families, women and children, standing there, you know, speaking their mind. But you had police in full riot gear. In fact, the one picture I saw, the cop had his hand around the guy's throat, and the guy's just standing there. You go, wow, this is America.
You know, it's sad. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars arming our police with the latest gadgetry and equipment, and you know, some of it may have been necessary, but I'll tell you, when the showdown occurred, you had longshore workers, community members, other union supporters and community leaders on the railroad tracks staring at a locomotive that had been ordered by this powerful grain company to make this delivery, and you had police on the other end that were trying to stop these peaceful protesters. And my point is that people had to be willing to put their bodies on the line. They had to stand up in front of the locomotive. They had to stand up in front of the police. And it was a peaceful protest, but it required courage. And I think that's what we're going to require a lot more of. We have to be able to speak truth to power. And we have to live by the creed of the Longshore Union, which is an injury to one is an injury to all. And if we can make that part of our everyday lives, I think we could have a tremendous impact and change the direction of the country.
I absolutely agree with you. In fact, last night we were talking to a guy about the way labor history is taught in this country, and it's basically non-existent in our schools. Which is why when we were in Wisconsin and the whole uprising happened there, I came out and said, look, the reality is it's because those kids had labor history in school. They knew what it meant when a governor said they were going to call in the National Guard, and they took action. And this is another one of those examples of where you've got to talk about your history. You've got to talk about what it took to get the good-paying jobs that my grandfather's generation were able to get and provide for the next generation. And it's action like what you guys are doing out there in Longview, Washington.
Listen, you're absolutely right. I think we're all suffering from historical amnesia, and we need to do a lot more talking, a lot more clipping, you know, sharing things at work. When we find something that's interesting in the newspaper that makes a point, cut it out. Make copies. Spread it to your coworkers. We need to be teaching lessons and making those points so that folks begin to have the ammunition to make the arguments and feel more confident so that they can stand up and take on some of these powerful thugs and bullies in the corporate world that have been pushing us around for too long.
As I call them, petty dictators. You know, the reality here is you're a union of about 50,000 members. These are corporations who are worth billions and billions of dollars, and they've got a government police force that we've funded to protect them against us.
Absolutely, it's also, you mentioned at the beginning of the program that this is the kind of situation that forces people to choose sides. Which side are you on? And that's applied too for the politicians. It's been very interesting to see where the politicians come down on this. Some people who, you know, a year or two ago were coming around asking for political contributions, asking for endorsements, were some of the same people who were considering calling out the National Guard, putting bayonets on the end of rifles and sending them into crowds of working people. This is also reminiscent of the 1930s. And we are going to have to do a lot more careful and thoughtful consideration of who are our friends and who are not so friendly.
Yep.
When it comes to the politicians as well.
You know, that's the exact reason I started this program 6 years ago. You know, I remember politicians coming around to the union halls making all these promises in the hall. But you never heard them say anything in public. And when I started this, that my goal was is when they would come and they would say, you know, I'm going to stand by you and I'm going to make sure that, you know, you get a fair shake. Well, you're going to say it in public for everybody to hear, not under the cloak of night or in the secrecy of a union hall, but out in public and stand by working people. And because you need it in situations like you're in right now.
That's right. You know, I remember here in San Francisco, the former mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, made a very powerful point early on in his administration when he actually walked on the picket line with the low-wage hotel and restaurant workers and made a very powerful point. When the employers and the big hotel owners resisted his efforts to seek a compromise and a settlement, he went out there and marched with the hotel workers. And I know that's something that nobody in San Francisco has forgotten. And politicians that are willing to do that are willing to put themselves in those railroad tracks with the other workers and the families that are staring down those locomotives and the sheriffs and their guns, that's when you're challenged, and we need to see more folks in the political world challenged in that way. Will you stand with us? Do you have the courage to stand up to these corporations and stand with the working people, literally?
Yeah, you sure hope they do. Any truth to the AP story that you guys you captured six guards and you held them hostage? Any truth to that?
No, listen, we held them for a few hours and released them. No, just kidding. That didn't happen. It was a mistake, and the reporter and the police chief who was responsible for that erroneous information recanted that account, and it was based on, I think, a chaotic and you know, probably upsetting situation for the folks involved there. You know, the company has hired a group of folks that don't have much experience. They're not paying them well, and you know, I think they were probably frightened when they saw hundreds of folks come in there and make their point, but no, there were no hostages taken, and that has since been recanted by the police chief in Longview.
Yeah, that's what happens. You know, I when I think of situations like this where you're hiring people to be on the company side of things, I always think of Jay Gould and the quote that's attributed to him: "I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half."
Well, listen, divide and conquer is an old strategy, and I think, you know, this consortium of companies, one of them is from Korea, one of them from Japan, and one of them is a U.S. company called Bungie that operates in 30 different countries and made $2.5 billion last year. These are big, big, powerful companies. They're used to getting their way, and you know, I think they know how to play divide and conquer. They would love to have one union fighting with another. They brought in another union to do some work there, and are trying to pretend that they're a union-friendly company. But everybody knows they're not, and everybody knows it's just a ruse to try and divide and conquer. But people aren't buying it, and the community there understands what's at stake. They know that the good family wage jobs that the ILWU has established over decades of struggle are worth fighting for, and that's why the community backs this struggle and why the union's backing the community. We're all in this together.
Absolutely, and that's the mentality that has to go on just about on a number of issues across the board. Let me ask you this as we move forward. I saw today that the one of the district courts out your way threw out the NLRB's motion to ban picketing there, which I guess is a huge win for you guys.
You know, that was a very positive thing. It's not unusual for the companies to run to the courts, and it's not hard to find judges that'll issue an injunction. And, you know, it's not just because the judges are pro-business and anti-labor. It's that the deck is stacked against workers. The laws have been written in this country to favor corporations and to disadvantage workers. It's not fair. So, you know, when companies are union-busting and violating the law right and left, it's hard to get a court injunction. But when a union has a picket line that someone thinks is too effective, the law allows them to run into federal court and get an injunction. Now, the court, I think, wisely and appropriately rejected the company's arguments and, frankly, the arguments by the National Labor Relations Board that we're trying to unnecessarily and unfairly restrict the right of union members to protest and to picket. So in this case, the court wisely maintained the right for legal picketing to continue at this site. And again, that, as you point out, that was a victory. It's sad in this day and age that you have to consider the right to express your constitutional right and your right to organize and take action with your coworkers as a victory, but that's what it is in 2011, and we'll take that victory. And, you know, next week we'll have another court fight and hope we can win that one, too.
So where do you go?
Don't make no mistake. These guys are throwing everything they have at the union, and they'll try and go to court. They'll try and win with their public relations campaign. They've hired some professional union-busting thugs. These guys know how to play the game with hardball, and we're going to give them a good fight.
At the end of this, you know, it shows how fractured and broken our labor laws are. The reality is, as I've read this story, you guys had a contract with the port. Anybody doing business in there has to use members from the ILWU, as I understand it.
That's correct. That's correct. And the company agreed to that, said they'd comply with that. Like I said, they got their subsidies. After they built their facility, it was another story. They reneged on the deal and double-crossed the community. And the result is, folks going to war with this company because it's just one more insult that the working class families in Longview are not willing to tolerate. And good for them for standing up and fighting back.
Okay, where does this go from here? How long is this going to last? What are your thoughts?
Look, as long as it takes another day, it's going to be one day at a time here. This thing could easily go weeks, months. It could be years. These kinds of struggles, aren't going to come easy. They aren't going to come quick. But the good news is that the communities in this area are totally committed to winning this fight. And the union members are totally committed to building the kinds of coalitions and working together with allies to see that this is a lesson that this and other companies learn and don't forget quickly.
Well, keep up the fight, Craig. You've always got a friend here at the Rick Smith Show, and I appreciate your time.
Rick, you keep up the good work, and want to give a shout-out to all your listeners for keeping the faith and keeping action going to make America what it can and should be.
Thanks so much. Craig Merrilees, ILWU Communications Director. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts after this.
3,000 people screaming out. Where's our government? Law suits and arraignments. Members under company surveillance. Public divided. These are the law before they hate us. Profit billions off our back. And it's still not enough. They should have broken through a gap.
That we never give up.
We'll be here.
Radio experience where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Sitting at the kitchen table with Tom and his laptop.
My name is Tom, and I'm here today to learn how to save money on my prescriptions with Capital Blue Cross.
Capital's VP of Pharmacy Services, Meenock, is here. She's showing Tom how to use the Capital website to learn his prescription price before he heads to the pharmacy today.
You would want to know what is the cost of that medication to basically stretch your healthcare dollar, because that's your dollar.
The point is, members have options to save time and money. And if Tom wants to log on at 1 a.m. to renew a prescription, that's fine, too.
Having that flexibility to be able to order prescriptions at any time of the day or night is fantastic. And the mail order feature is really like a self-service feature. We love that.
Meenock doesn't usually make house calls, but today she's happy to help.
This is one of the ways we care more, so we do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
What they do? They smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers. Backstabbers. They smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers.
You know, and there's a lot of them in the Republican Party. The more I hear these stories, the more it infuriates me. The Paul Ryans of the world who benefited from Social Security, survivor benefits, wanting to slam the door on anybody else getting that, just infuriates me. When I look at this governor from New Mexico, a Republican named Susana Martinez, going after the quote-unquote illegal people, not wanting to give them driver's license because it's a dangerous practice of giving those undocumented people anything to protect the people of New Mexico against. You hear this with the right-wing Tea Party anger, wanting to go after the illegals, then you find out. You find out that the good Governor Martinez, well, her grandparents, oddly enough, were illegal. And I look at this and I say, with what hypocrisy do you look through? I mean, what is it that you think now that somehow, well, that was back then. They were illegal back then, years ago. What about the kids who are you now? I mean, it's amazing to me that you have folks who are such hypocrites. I've talked a number of times about myself. When my mother passed away when I was 13, I was able to collect Social Security disability benefits for a couple of years. And it wasn't a lot of money. It was just a couple hundred. I think it was like $230 a month or something like that. But it was enough to help pay the bills. It was enough to help food and clothes and all the things that I needed to get to 18. And Paul Ryan wants to slam that door. And I think of all those people in New Mexico who, because of our trade policies and because of the draw of American corporations pulling folks here, you've got governors like this one who wants to slam the door on those people, even though she benefited from it. She became governor. Her grandparents, you're talking two generations. Her grandparents came here illegally. Her parents were, I guess, technically, if you use their way of thinking, illegal as well. And then she's governor. That, she should be everywhere saying, I am the epitome of the American dream. I am the living embodiment of the American experience. My parents, grandparents came here with nothing. I am governor. That, to me, folks, an amazing story. But not for her. No. We want to get rid of sanctuary status for those illegal people. And she did that right afterwards. It's amazing to me, just amazing. And you look at what's going on in Wisconsin. And the voter ID vote fight's going to come here. We're going to be doing the same thing. It's going to be coming into the Senate here in Pennsylvania to pass the House. This whole idea that we're going to have free voter ID cards for folks who don't have licenses. Well, get ready for this scam because they rammed it through in Wisconsin. this is a directive from the executive secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, a guy named Steve Kreiser. He said, while you should certainly help customers who come in asking for free ID to check the appropriate box, you should refrain from offering the free version to customers who do not ask for it. So basically, the folks who don't know that it's free or don't know how to go about it, we're going to screw them. And we're going to make sure that when we tell them it's $20 or $30 or whatever it is, they say, well, gee, I don't have that kind of money. And what's also amazing to me, and get ready for it, it's going to happen here, shortly after they ram that voter ID bill through. Walker wanted to close 16 DMV offices. And gee, guess where they were? In heavily Democratic areas. I mean, they're not even trying to hide it. And, you know, I look at Obama and I say, you know, what would the right have done if Obama would have come in and had the mentality of a Scott Walker or a Kasich or a LePage up in Maine, or that Rick Scott down in Florida, or Rick Snyder in Michigan, who says, I'm going to appoint overlords. I'm going to appoint dictators. What would the right have done? They would have lost their ever-loving freaking mind. And he didn't do that. But there's part of me that says maybe he should have. And if he would have, I'm sure the ACLU would have jumped all over him, like they're doing a lot of the right-wing policies right now. Down in Florida, that Governor Rick Scott implemented a forced drug testing policy on all welfare recipients. And I told you a couple of weeks ago what the results of the first round were. 2%. 2%. They spent millions of dollars to catch a couple of people. I think six, they said. Millions of dollars. But you know where those millions of dollars went? To his wife. So it was money well spent. Well, the ACLU now is taking that to court. They filed a suit on Tuesday against the state of Florida on behalf of a 35-year-old Navy veteran. He's a single parent who lost his job back in 08 because the employer downsized and hasn't been able to find a job since, has gone through some job training. Now I guess he's in college. He's still trying to take care of his kid. They want him to be drug tested. And he's like, you know what? I don't think so. I've done nothing wrong. And good for them. I hope they push this through, and I hope they have it overturned, because I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's a massive waste of money. I mean, if you stop and think about all the money that we're wasting on this, it's just mind-blowing. Also, the ACLU filed a suit here in Pennsylvania, and they won a $48,500 settlement from a lawsuit brought on behalf of a guy arrested while videotaping a friend of his being interrogated by a University of Pittsburgh police officer. And they arrested the guy, and, you know, look, they wanted to throw him in jail because they charged him with a felony. And you go, well, how is that exactly a felony? Well, the Wiretap Act evidently forbids any audio recording without the consent of all people involved. They said, well, wait a second, this cop evidently didn't want to be recorded, and he said he didn't want to. So under Pennsylvania's Wiretapping Act, that's a felony. But the ACLU argued, look, he's a government official. We should be able to record government officials in what they're doing so that they don't do anything wrong. It was settled, and I guess now you're going to be able to record policemen doing what it is that they do. And I don't think it's a bad thing. This should make some of the anti-abortion people nuts. The ACLU filed a lawsuit today against the state of North Carolina, saying that they should have to have a pro-choice license plate because they authorized an anti-abortion license plate and it rejected the pro-choice one. So the ACLU said, you know what? You can have your anti-abortion license plate, but you've got to have the other. And I think it's a smart thing. Whatever look, it's about freedom of speech. If they've got the freedom to put on their license plate, your baby killer, some people should have the opportunity to put something else on their plate as well, or have nothing. See, a license plate should be about identifying the vehicle. Shouldn't be about your personal little political statement. That's what bumper stickers were made for. It would help the industry. Just amazing. And lastly, and I'm not sure where I'm falling on this, but the guy who's the head of the Libertarian Party in Florida, he evidently let his driver's license expire, then went driving, and decided to call the police. And every time he went driving, he called the police and got himself turned in and ended up getting a couple of tickets. He is now going to fight the whole driver's license thing on the basis that the Real ID Act is a violation of the Constitution. So while I'm against the Real ID Act, I think it's kind of dumb to go driving around with a without a license. So I think at the end of this, he's going to get popped. But maybe we'll have a discussion about the Real ID, which to me kind of dead at this point, but we shall soon see. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this to wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
On July 5, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download it there at the website or get your smartphone and grab the Stitcher app. Stitcher, Stitcher, Stitcher. And you can take your class war on the go. UPI story coming out. A Florida woman said she put up a house full of rats banner at a foreclosed home adjoining her home in an attempt to draw some attention and get the bank to clean it up. Lynn McGee, 62, of Green Acres, Florida, said that the adjoining house had been foreclosed since September of 2009, but the sale has been met with numerous delays and rats have taken control of the property. And, you know, she put this big sign out there and she said, look, something's got to get done. And this is what's going on across the country. We've let too many of these houses sit for too long. And the president talked a little bit about what he wants to do with the mortgage crisis and with the foreclosures. You know, I don't know. It's a step, probably something that should have been done back in January of 2009. Like I said from the beginning, have people modify their mortgages down to the current rates and not charge them a boatload of money with PMI and the title insurance and underwriting and all the other fees and penalties and this and that. Just go ahead and do it. Lower those rates. It's not that hard to do. And say, look, banks, sorry, you're going to take a haircut on this. But it's going to help save our economy. It's going to help save this country from the crisis that you created. And then the people who are struggling, you buy up those homes and you do something with them. Sell them back. Sell them to low-income folks at reasonable prices. Something. But get them occupied. Don't allow them to be filled with rats because it harms the rest of the neighborhood. And that's part of the big problem here. The problem is we've let these banks get too big. They're too powerful. And I look at this story from Honolulu, Hawaii. This woman lost her husband to cancer back in August. And, you know, he owed Bank of America some money. So, you know, the bank called again. And, in fact, she's saying called her 48 times a day to remind her that her husband owed them money. And I'm going, you know, at some point, don't you have any laws that protect you from, you do, from these kind of robocalling telemarketers, from these collection agents, 48 times a day. Can you imagine that? I mean, here at the studio, somehow they've got a number that rings into our studio. And at least once a week, I think we get a robocall saying, if you're so-and-so, call this number. Well, we're not so-and-so. And when you call the number, it's usually doesn't work anyway. So that's a whole nother pain in the neck. A couple of quick funny stories before I head out of here for the night. And I hope everybody on the road is safe tonight. I'm going to be heading out of here in Harrisburg, hoping that I can escape from Harrisburg. Evidently, I just found out that there is a curfew in place, so I'm going to have an interesting time getting home. And I hope the roads are open. And I hope you're safe, and I hope you're at home. And you stay safe and dry over the next couple of days as the river, I guess, is going to continue to rise. So safe, home, dry. That's where we go. Edmonton, Alberta, Canadian radio station, has a very interesting promotional contest. One, you know, maybe not such a bad idea if you stop and think about it in a rational way. Male listeners can register to win a Russian bride. Now there are some people upset about it, you know, because they claim you're auctioning off, you know, people and you're degrading marriage. And, you know, the contest is called Win a Wife, and it gives you the opportunity to go over to one of these communities in Russia, and they'll pay for you to stay there for 13 nights, give you some money. You'll get to meet the potential bride. You'll have conversations. You hit it off. You get married. What's the difference between doing that and what goes on with The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or any of these other idiot reality shows? But the religious people and the conservatives in Canada losing their ever-loving freaking minds. And good, because anything that ticks those people off, to me, is a step in the right direction. But I started thinking about this, you know, this whole win a wife thing. And I'm going, well, you know, it's like a prize, right? So maybe you'd put some effort into, you know, keeping her. And the two of you would actually work harder at staying together. Couldn't be any worse than our 50 to 70% divorce rate that we've done to marriage in this country already. And I'm sure in Canada it's not much better, but just a thought. Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests. Tomorrow, I don't know what's going to happen Friday. They're saying that the Susquehanna River is going to rise. May not be able to get into the studio. We're hoping that we'll be here tomorrow night. If not, you'll hear a best of program. Again, I hope everybody is safe in their homes. I hope that, you know, you've done what we should have done. And there's nobody out doing anything dumb like, hey, let's go swimming in the river as it's rushing down the way. Or, hey, let's go drive across that deep water. As we saw some of the funny videos, on YouTube with, do the smart thing. Just stay home. Anyway, I want to thank our guests. And again, tonight's speech, the delivery, fantastic. I'm happy that I saw some spark. I saw some gumption, a little spine. That's a nice thing. Maybe that's going to translate into some actual action. And maybe we get this economy going again. Maybe we get people back to work. Maybe we start to see that spiraling up that I've been looking for. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com or Stitcher. See you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's covered like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WI.